aboard, you people! Starship, Rokan Show, off for another day of broadcast insolence. I want to thank everybody for joining us. I want to say hello to Kevin Powell, Lauren Lapka. They're getting you through the afternoon. Sports news and information from Mr. Powell. Traffic, weather, and corrections of any sort of factual error by Lauren Lapka. So we've got that all worked out. Kim Gordon keeps you up to date in the newsroom. Coming up on the program, Ben Bradley is going to be here from Channel 9. The doomsday clock has moved. I love this story because it's a story that gets top level coverage around the country whenever they do something with the doomsday clock, and it's made up. It's the one thing that is a complete and utter fabrication. I get the idea of it. I get the idea that there's a lot of things happening. You heard the former governor from the twice governor from California, Jerry Brown, Governor Moonbeam, as he used to be known in the 1970s, talking about, between global warming and political unrest and nuclear proliferation, we're all doomed. And now we're 111 seconds away or 110 seconds away from death. Well, I just want to point this out, that right now it is 3:09 and 19 seconds. Let's find out if we are still here at about 3:12. I can't do the math in my head right now, so don't hold me to what the exact number would be. I cannot believe, day in, day out, year in, year out, that they still get publicity by doing this thing. It's one thing when there was an actual, like during the Cold War, when everybody was thinking that they were going to get blown up by the Russians. Now we think that we just think we're going to get weird Facebook commercials from them. That's the only thing that we're concerned about with the Russians. I don't know. It just seems to me to be a very, very bad deal. All right, and we'll talk about that. Rick DeMille is going to be here to talk about this weather system that is moving through. It's sitting over us right now. It's supposed to move out on Saturday. It's very depressing. It's exactly as Demetrius Ivory described it to us yesterday, which is it's just a swirling thing. At any given moment, it could do almost anything. It could rain on you. It could snow on you. There might be a peak of sun from time to time. It gets windy. Then the wind totally dies down. It's basically like a merry-go-round of a low-pressure system. We'll find out when finally that's going to go away. Willie Wilson, the man who wanted to be mayor, the man who wanted to be governor, the man who also wanted to be president of the United States, you might remember. He ran for president in 2016. I can't remember if he won, but I something tells me he didn't. He's going to be here. He's one of, if you've never heard Willie Wilson on this program before, then you've never really heard Willie Wilson. He's one of our favorite guests. He's one of our, he's a stalwart. And he's very informational. Once you figure out exactly what it is he said, it's very informational. He wants reparations, which goes a little bit against his initial brand when he was running for as a fiscal conservative. But we'll see how that all works out. He's got a good argument for it, I'm sure. He always does. And we're giving stuff away on the program today. Pair of tickets to see America's Got Talent winner Terry Fader. The ventriloquist, impressionist, comedian, singer. He's going to be at Aurora's Paramount Theater on Saturday. Get tickets at ParamountAurora.com. And we have those coming for you in the 4 o'clock hour. All right. And top 5-5. Mr. Mike Monaco is going to be here, our attorney, the official legal analyst of the Rokan Show. Unpaid position for many years. For over 25 years, he's been doing that. And he has we'd like to play a game. Is this legal? So we'll be taking your phone calls. This is a little, I know Bob this morning did something similar to this, like getting your legal questions answered. We do it a little differently. We have people who think they've broken the law call us and tell us whether or not, and see if Mike can get them out of it. It's really less about real estate closings and more about bank robberies. So we'll do that. And Richard Roper, the gentleman. This is that Matthew McConaughey, Hugh Grant, Colin Farrell, and Henry Golding all together. So this looks like it's going to be absolutely great. And then Nicolas Cage has got a new movie out, too. So we'll find out about that. All right. Oh, and a great war movie, actually, is out this weekend, too, called The Last Full Measure, which is supposed to... If it had come out a couple weeks earlier, people are saying that it might have been an Oscar contender. So, turns out, maybe for next year. All right. We'll get to all of that We'll get to your phone calls at 312-981-7200. We'll get to the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom at the bottom of the hour. But most importantly, we've got the traffic and the weather with Lauren Lapko right now. Kevin.
He's coming right now.
Kevin. Kevin's going to have to tell us something.
Hello, Rove. For news at 10, watch WGN, Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Marone, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, for TV news at 10.
Uh-huh.
Watch Chicago's very own WGN. Ben Bradley's on WGN TV.
Is he?
Often.
Is he really? Is he? And he's not here either.
What's happening?
This will be the moment. It was very well done, Kevin. This is where you introduce... we're teaching Kevin here. We're teaching him all the mechanics of the ropes of this business. This is where you introduce Ben Bradley, who would be in his position at the WGN-TV newsroom, right. And he would be talking to us.
Maybe he is where I just was.
Yeah. Were you in the bathroom?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's the problem that we have now around here, is there's always a line at the bathroom, and we have to, very short timeouts here.
Right.
Where is Ben? Can we find out where Ben is? Get Ben on the phone.
Oh, I hear him.
Hello.
There he is.
You're 60 seconds early.
Yes. Sorry about that.
You know, I'm on a scooter these days. It's not so easy for me to get around.
Oh, that's right. We learned that about Ben Bradley from WGN-TV News, that you had a little slip and fall while you were in some foreign country a couple
weeks. Yes, do you have a good lawyer I could call? No, wait. I would have to sue myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fell and fractured my fibia, which is essentially like breaking your ankle.
Did you fall on it? I mean, you were on a bike, right?
So I was on a bike going downhill mm-hmm. in the driveway in the dark, and I hit a bunch of speed bumps and went over the top. And I think if you think of your foot is like your left foot. I went to the left, and my foot kind of came in under me and rolled in.
Oh.
And it hurts.
Does it still hurt?
It's better, but still hurts. I'm in a boot, and then I have this little scooter that I put my knee on, you know, to get mm-hmm. around long distances. And I've told you that my coworkers all week have been stealing my scooter when I leave it, you know, off to the side of the set or just outside my office. But finally, I can report one of my WGN colleagues did something incredibly kind for me this morning. Paul Conrad bought me this for my scooter, and I'm gonna play it. Tell me what you think.
That's very good.
He got me a bell for my scooter. So now I just go flying down the halls at WGN.
How long do you have to be on the scooter?
I can gradually put more weight on my foot in the boot. So hopefully I go back for an X-ray in 2 weeks. So
okay, so 3 weeks from tomorrow, you and I are getting on an airplane, and we are going to another foreign country for an event.
Did I not tell you that you're going to have to carry me through?
I've been carrying you for years, Ben. It would not be the first time.
Yeah.
Well, you and I are going to have to get on an airplane and go to this event.
Mm.
That is, you know, and it's a couple of airplane trips, right? I mean, this is
running through airport terminals.
Right. Yeah. People don't realize this, but Ben and I are the real people that they based Homeland on. And so every once in a while, we have to go to a foreign country and do some things.
Yeah.
But are you going to be mobile?
Yeah, I'll be mobile. I walked.
Because I'm not carrying you around this country.
Yeah, I thought this thing was a sprain for the first week and walked on it, which didn't help.
Did that retard your progress?
Yes, it definitely slowed me. You know, that shows me for listening to some drunk guy by the pool who's like, nah, you can put weight on it. No, it's fine. Just walk on it.
I get my best advice from drunks, often from me, just in the middle of the night. All right, so what is I know I'm making this about us right now, but if I swear to God, if all of a sudden we go to this thing and you're not able to move around, I'm leaving you for dead. I just want to let you know that.
It was kind of how my wife felt when we were in Mexico, and when they asked me if I wanted to go to the Mexican hospital, I immediately saw the look in her eyes, which was, well, you can go, but I'm going to stay back here. Just let me know how that works out.
I always imagine when, it doesn't matter what country you're in, I always imagine that a hospital is like one of those like World War II movies, or like 1917. There's a lot of this in that World War I movie where it's, you know, there's just like fly netting. right?
Absolutely.
And some wood.
Like one IV bag.
Right.
And there's a guy walking on a peg leg.
Tiny little rusty beds. That's all I imagine about any hospital anywhere in the world.
Like 100 people in one open room.
Right.
Yes. And of course, it would take, you know, 8 hours to be seen. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. No, right. But hopefully, in this place that you and I are going to, I would imagine the medical care would be even worse than
yes.
I would have experienced in Mexico.
We are okay. So I just want people to know this.
I appreciate your concern about my ability to travel, but
I want people to understand what it is. You know, Ben and I have been friends for years, and we do things together from time to time when his wife allows it, or you know when I can find the time.
Yeah.
But there is a special event that we've been invited to. A friend of ours is getting married. And we're going to a third world country for this.
Which tells you what we think of the guy, right?
Right. I mean, that's a crazy thing.
I wouldn't go. If you called me tomorrow and told me you were getting married in Decatur, I probably wouldn't make the drive.
Exactly. I didn't say we were close friends. I just said we were friends. So we're going to this third world country. And it really is a third world country.
We're not even being snobbish about it.
No. It declares itself.
When you land at the airport, a US-flagged airline.
Right. It says "Welcome to Third World Country" when you land.
And, I love the wedding invitation. You know, so you had the beautiful like print or whatever, and the mother of so and so requests the honor. And that was all nice. And then you go to page two, which were like the hotel and travel instructions, which included when you land at the airport, whatever you do. Don't accept a ride from anyone. Don't get into a taxi, even if it's marked.
Right, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Keep your eyes down. Make no eye contact. And right. and if you do have, if you're bringing cash, wear a money belt.
Bro, I'm excited to go international with you because I would imagine you have every like money belt, safety device. You travel with like 10 copies of your passport.
I got a lot. You're not wrong about that.
And I would imagine you're going to slow us down because I'm one of these. I go TSA pre-check, right? Like I could be going to Antarctica for a month and I would have a carry-on, right? I don't believe in checking my luggage. But just your medical hypochondria.
Yeah, true.
I mean, I would imagine you have a suitcase just for your like penicillin, your sleeping aids, all that stuff.
Yes. I don't even know how I'm going to bring my valet with me. I have no idea. We haven't worked that part out. Anyway, the point is, we're doing this, and we're going to this third world country, and if you are hobbling in a third world country, that makes us, we're like wounded animals then, Ben.
Yes.
that's a situation where they're going
to... us very quickly.
Right, they're going to...
I now see my mark.
They're going to see us, and they're going to go, look at that, there's a wounded guy. Look at those two doughy white Americans, and...
who are very pasty, have clearly not been in the sun in four months.
I mean, unless they are... let's just hope they're CIA. I mean, I don't because
well, and you and I are going to be in our Panama Jack outfits, right? Like white linen, a hat,
God, I'm going to get killed on this trip.
You get jacked, you will immediately go. He's the weak one. He can't chase.
Yeah, this is the first time I'll ever be able to outrun Ben. Is that I'm going to take off and I'm just like I don't know. Okay, you can have him. He's fresh meat. He's younger than I am, so it'd be more tender.
All right. I've been married a couple times, so I don't have any money. Take right. his. He's still on his first wife.
That's right. And they got dough.
All right.
You're going to hold him hostage.
So I guess I won't bring the scooter and my bell from Paul Conrad to the wedding.
No, I don't think you should. Thank you.
No.
But yesterday we did the story about Harley Davidson has just released their motorcycle, the electric motorcycle. And it sounds just like this. It's a totally made-up sound, right?
I was gonna say, it sounds like Star Trek: The Next Generation when they're hopping to warp speed.
Right. Well, that's what, and I think it probably is the same. It's probably the exact same sound that they bought from Hollywood. But I think you should get that for your scooter too. You should put a little speaker on the end.
Very cool.
You're such an idiot. All right, what is coming up on the WGN TV news? That's not what they're paying us to sit around here and talk about.
No,
leaving you for dead.
Well, we're obviously covering the Senate impeachment trial. And did you see this interesting angle from Lynn Sweet in the Sun Times? The senators are apparently revolting over their dietary restrictions placed on them during the impeachment trial. You know, liquids, they can only have water and milk in the chamber.
No coffee?
No coffee.
How can you stay? I tried to stay awake. I watched an hour of this yesterday. I fell asleep in my chair.
And some of these senators, keep in mind, already nap like 8-10 times a day.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
I cannot imagine why they would do that. Did they? But they were going to let coffee. Aren't they opening that up, liberalizing that?
I have not seen anything that they've liberalized it, but I know that.
And what adult drinks milk in the middle of the day?
Well, don't you think it was some, like, the Wisconsin dairy lobby probably got that inserted in the law in 1926?
Right. Next impeachment.
Exactly.
This didn't really work out through Andrew Johnson. But if we ever impeach again.
The Foxconn thing didn't work out. But listen, we're going to make the senators only drink milk.
Yes.
To help Wisconsin.
Exactly. I mean, that's the dumbest thing I have ever heard. Because, I mean, you know, these guys are old, right?
Well,
the average age of a senator is 68.
That was the thought, was most of these guys, I think the average age is 88. So maybe these guys need the calcium in their diets.
Well,
this is how they...
I think it's more, but it makes them gassy and stuff. Oh, that's got to be bad.
Yeah.
Oh, well, and yeah, I could just...
like different senators buying meals that they can't eat on the floor, but during quick breaks. You want to know what Dick Durbin bought?
What
takeout from Rhodey.
Rhodey, oh.
Yeah.
I like Rhodey a lot.
Duckworth, she'll provide... Thai takeout.
Oh, okay. So they
order.
No, wait,
spicy,
wait, hold on. I got a question.
Whoa. For 12 hours.
Wait, hold on. They literally pick up the phone and they go to some Thai restaurant, the Star of Siam of Washington, D.C., and they call that and they say, all right, the delivery, where to? And you're like, oh, a delivery. All right, it's the Capitol, the Senate side, cloakroom 2.
Just ask to come in. You'll be fine.
Who
random
does that?
Takeout guy just walks right in front of the camera during the impeachment trial.
Who
ordered food? I have an order for Duckworth.
That's me. That's me.
And then Durbin yells from the back, did you bring the cookies?
Oh, man. This is...
We're into the slap happy stage of impeachment.
Yes, we are.
We went back to Maury, by the way.
I noticed that.
Yeah.
Channel 9 was in wall to wall impeachment coverage yesterday.
The Maury viewers get upset if they don't know who the father is. Okay? Spoiler
alert. Trust me.
He's always the father.
He's the baby daddy. Or at least the baby daddy's on set somewhere or in the audience.
Exactly.
Yeah. Can we talk about what the decision was there?
I think he was the father.
Okay. All right. Good. I noticed that.
No,
I turned it on.
As far as I can see, everybody has gone back to regular programming with the exception of NBC. I know yesterday we stayed with it through 4 o'clock, right up to our local news at 4.
Mm-hmm.
Channel 7 had gone off early. You know, they've got a lot of eyeballs on Jeopardy at 3:30.
Yeah, they don't want to lose Jeopardy, yeah.
Think about how much money the networks and the television stations give up to go wall-to-wall, no commercial.
Well, okay. I mean, it is the impeachment of a sitting president. I mean, so it's like...
But it's not
it's
like it was
newsworthy.
20 years ago where this is the only place you can see it is on network TV.
Well, that's true.
It's interesting to me that NBC was still wall-to-wall when they're the only ones who can say, hey, we've got a 24-hour cable news channel. You can flip over to MSNBC and watch this if you want.
You're right, because CBS and ABC don't have that. Fox has it, obviously. But Fox, I don't think Fox was ever going.
Fox is not carried...
They're local stuff, no.
Local Fox, anyway.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, we think it's important to give folks local news at 4 o'clock too, right? There's other things going on in their world. So,
and imagine how mad Wendy Williams would have been if they had interrupted her show. All right, okay. Well, that's all going on then.
So you can still catch Maury right now.
Thank you.
You're welcome,
baby daddy. Thank you so much, Ben. Feel better. Right now, Kim Gordon's got the WGN news from the WGN News Radio Center. Bro Con Show, right here on 720 WGN. All right, Rick DeMaio, famed aviation meteorologist, is joining us right now. Also was a TV weather guy here for many years at CBS and at Fox. And Rick, thank you so much for being with us. I would like you to explain.
No problem, Rob.
I'd like you to explain exactly what the hell is happening here. Why it is the most depressing weather I have ever seen ever. In Chicago.
Well, you know me. I always like to put things into perspective. Does this not remind you of like the middle of March as opposed to the middle of January, Ro?
It reminds me of Well, it's gunmetal gray skies, you know, and,
right.
and it's that is true. That's kind of a March feature.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's cold. It's the only thing that I thought was redeeming about this was this morning, the mm-hmm. fresh white snow that fell lightly overnight covered up the junk
from a couple of weeks
right,
ago.
Right, covered up the gray, awful, dirty, snow, yep. ice balls that we have here.
Yeah, you know, I grew up in Queens, and I used to always love that fresh covered snow because I think back in the 70s, we didn't have the pooper scoopers out yet. So it covered up a lot of the number ones, number twos, and things like that.
Thanks for reminding us of that. That was really true.
A bunch of Chicago looks like that as well, but I think now it's beginning to melt. So whatever stuff that fell this morning, which I think totaled about an inch in O'Hare and about an inch at the National Weather Service office down in Romeoville, and about an inch and a half across the northwest suburbs, is beginning to melt, and wouldn't be surprised if it gets completely liquefied by rain and drizzle in the next few hours.
So, is there more snow on the way tomorrow, though?
Yeah, there is. You know, one of the things that we always talk about in the world of meteorology, before I left my office at Lewis about an hour ago, Paul Merzlach, former NWS employee, were talking about how you never turn your back on an upper low. And
that's
true.
I've always said that, Rick DeMaio. Never turn your back. Kids, didn't I always tell you never turn your back at an upper low? Didn't I always say that?
All the time.
You would be terrible if you were like one of my aviation students. I would never be able to get through a lecture. You know that? anyway, and I know you want to talk about the stuff that happened at Lewis earlier today. We'll get to that in a minute.
But I know
Demetrius was talking about this yesterday. Not only is this an upper low, but it's kind of wobbling. So you've got parts of it that are producing a little bit of light snow, parts of that are producing drizzle. But when the part that comes through tomorrow, that becomes a little bit more enhanced, in other words, the core of the upper low and the core of the coldest air, as well as the timing. So, you know, when you get into the middle of January, once you get into the darkness of the night, you can easily take away 1 or 2 degrees from your temperature during the day, and that diurnal effect will actually allow the column to cool a little bit. So what we're concerned about is a narrow core, almost like a rotating cylinder of snow that's going to redevelop late tomorrow afternoon into tomorrow night.
Oh, God.
But right now, this is kind of interesting. All of the models have now pushed that band of snow pretty much further west of the Fox River. So the chance of any snow developing from a standpoint of a high-impact event most likely is going to be after the evening rush hour tomorrow and most likely west of the Fox River. So I would lay my bets that here in the city, we don't see any more accumulating snow until maybe after midnight tomorrow night into Saturday morning. It would be points pretty much far west that may see an additional 2 inches. Even that is probably not going to accumulate much on the area roadways. There's just too much water on them,
yeah.
and also a lot of residual salt from the last couple of storms.
Right. I go out there with a salt shaker just personally. on my route to and from work, so I can get, I use the kosher salt because it's a little bigger grain, and then I just,
You would be a disruptor of my lecture. See what I mean?
Yeah. And my grandmother used to cook with the kosher salt, so I realize I like that better. So I throw it out there while I'm cooking. Let me ask you. All right, hold on. That's very important stuff, Rick DeMaio, famed meteorologist. If tomorrow is anything like last Friday, we're in for a humdinger, right? But it's not. You're saying
zero.
So because last Friday, even though that was a relatively small, by Chicago standards, snow event, it just hit exactly at the wrong time in rush hour. You're saying tomorrow's rush hour won't be like that.
And we know that there's no one out driving in the Chicagoland area between 3 and 5, right? That event last week, for the amount of snow that came down, was a high-impact event. This event, for the amount of snow coming down, is a low-impact event.
All right.
So it's not going to have anything from a standpoint of how it affects the rush hour, not only today, tomorrow morning, or Friday afternoon. Saturday morning may be a little bit on the dicey side, but I think even then, I don't see it being a big deal.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Can you hold on 1 second, and we'll talk about what happened at Lewis University today in Romeoville? Because this is a very – what people do not know is if you don't know this, you don't know it. But if you went to Lewis, you have family that went to Lewis. Lewis is a fairly sizable alumni corps here in the Chicago area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is one of the most esteemed aviation programs in the country.
Yeah.
And Rick teaches there for reasons that I think would knock a point or two off of that. But he does do the aviation meteorology there. And they just got a really, really cool thing there. We'll talk about that on the other side. But first, Rick, hold on 1 second. Now, somebody who can actually do the weather and keep it concise and the traffic, Lauren Lapka. Rokan Show on 720 WGN. News coming your way at the top of the hour for the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Rick DeMille is joining us. He's a famed aviation meteorologist. He was a TV meteorologist for a long time here in Chicago, too, on CBS and on Fox. Now he's a lecturer at both Lewis University down in Romeoville and Loyola University here in Chicago, where you teach aviation meteorology. And we use mm-hmm. you as the backup to the backup for all of our weather our weather questions. You've been on my show for years and years and years and years.
Yeah,
it's always fun. And the thing about Rick that I think is so cool is that before you got into television, you were mm-hmm. actually a meteorologist for United Airlines. Now, you stop and you think about that. You think about that, the responsibility of that job, because at any given moment, there are thousands of planes in the air over North mm-hmm. America, right? Yeah. And mm-hmm. and United has thousands of planes, right? And
right.
And if they're sitting, they're not eating. So you got to keep them in the air. You got to keep moving, and it's all related to weather. And that's one of the things that you teach it at Lewis, because aviation isn't going anywhere. Turns out that's not one of those industries that's going to fade away. I don't think.
No, and it's just expanding like crazy with drone technology, and just the amount of pilots and the amount of air traffic controllers in demand. Part of what I do is I teach the basics of weather as well as some of the things related to aviation administration. So the fact that I was actually able to take my kids onto our newly dedicated ND-80 from American Airlines today was pretty cool. It was quite the show of force of people at the hangar today, about 500 of us there.
So Lewis University, again, in Romeoville, they have an airport there, and they landed a Super 80. That was the workhorse for American forever. It's a single aisle aircraft, two seats on one side, three on the other, and then it has the two engines in the back. I mean, if you flew American, and United had some of these too, but if you flew American regularly, you found yourself on those things.
Right.
And including ones that still smell like they were from the era where people could smoke on airplanes. And and there's a lot of baby spit up smell, too, that's in some of those planes. But there is. So this. How did they get it into the Romeoville airport?
Well, our runway is 6,700 feet long.
Oh, so that's
which long. Is basically, yeah, it's the same length as runway 31 center at Midway. So it
Roger
was basically,
that,
they needed a VFR. We don't have an ILS system there. So we needed, obviously dry runways, decent winds, basically severe VFR. And we were able to do that on the 20th of December. And what was funny was the airplane, we were supposed to pull the plane into the hangar last night using one of our tugs. But because the ground was a little bit slick, they realized that they couldn't do it. So the plane had to stay outside today. So after we had the dedication ceremony, which was also attended by the pilots who flew the plane in from American, a bunch of dignitaries from American, as well as Congressman Bill Lipinski and Bill Foster, here we are with a line of people waiting to go into the airplane, up the stairs and down the aft gangway in a steady snow. They were not wanting to do that. So the whole idea of getting the nose of the plane into the hangar was to kind of shade people from the snow, but in the end it worked out okay.
Well, okay, so here's the thing I never fully understood. Because I am an aviation geek. I went up to Oshkosh last year. I go to every air show I can possibly find, I go to. My dad used to take me. They used to do military days at O'Hare when O'Hare had a military side, an Air Force and an Army side there. Mm-hmm. And they would in the middle of May, they would come in and they'd fly all these really cool military aircraft into O'Hare, and they just let anybody come out and see them. It's a little bit of the flying of the flag. I never understood, like, when you go to the Museum of Science and Industry and there's a 727 hanging there and people stand in line to get on board that thing. We've all been on board that thing. I mean, it's, I just don't understand why people want to go see a plane when they're on a plane all the time.
Well, here's the most amazing thing about today, Ro, is we have, you know, the hangar doors were closed. We had the president of the university, Dr. Livingston, give a speech. The department chairman, Ryan Phillips, people from American Airlines, and then Craig Neville, who is the maintenance person from American Airlines, who now works at Lewis. He was the one who was really the kind of the linchpin in making sure that we got this plane donated from American Airlines. He goes, "Okay, gentlemen, please open the hangar doors." And he had six of his students on one side and six of his students on the other. And if you remember that scene in the movie White Christmas, when they go, "Hey, look, it's snowing out," and they open the doors,
Story's going somewhere.
That's exactly what happened. Literally, the doors opened up. You see this plane just standing out there. The APU was running one of the engines. That's the auxiliary power unit. And Ro, it was the most bizarre thing. Everybody started to applaud. We were clapping for an airplane.
Again, you're looking. It would be like opening up a garage door and there's a car there, and people go, "Oh my God, look, a car!"
And I'm thinking to myself, when was the last time we applauded for a plane?
Never.
And one of the other professors, no. One of the professors says, when it was 2 hours late and it finally arrived at the gate.
Yeah, that's true.
But really, it was really cool because when you think about it, all of the MD-80s have now been retired to Roswell, New Mexico. And American Airlines said, "You know, we got two of these. Let's get one to Lewis University," because Craig Neville, who was one of the ex-mechanics there, now works for Lewis. And that's one of the great things about our school. So many people who teach are people who worked in the industry. So one of our retired professors from just last year, Bill Parrott, was a captain for American Airlines. He checked his logbook, and he found out that he actually flew that exact plane 20 years ago.
What are the chances? Rick? 100%. Let me ask you this. Lewis University going to do with that plane?
Oh, my God. Well, first off, you have the mechanics, the kids who are getting a degree in aircraft maintenance. We've already taken off the engine. We've put it back on. You basically figure out how it works. We learned basically all of the instrumentation devices on the inside of that airplane are basically what is being used right now. Now, granted, an MD-80 is an older airplane, but we're also going to use it. We're expected to get a used de-icing truck. We're going to teach kids how to do de-icing.
Oh, that'd be fun. I'd like to come out and do some de-icing.
Yeah, just from the standpoint of having it there, turning on the engines, going through the whole, you know, basically the ropes of what an airplane does and how it operates, particularly from a mechanic standpoint.
It's not certified to fly, though, right?
No. It's not going to take off again.
Because it's certified to taxi?
Yeah. You can taxi.
You can take a spin around the airport, that thing?
I don't know if we're going to do that.
I'd like to try that. Yeah.
So, you know, now we got a fleet of airplanes. We got a 37 and an MD-80. And it's and the thing about it is it still has that shiny kind of American Airlines look to it.
Yeah, that was cool.
I mean, it's kind of cool. So other than that, it was a pretty big day. And I think, again, we thank American Airlines for everything that they did. It was a lot of work. This was, Ro, 4 years in the making.
Yeah.
And we finally got it in.
Yeah, they don't want to give those planes up, even though they're sitting out in a boneyard somewhere. Giving those planes, it's expensive for them to do that. And it is, and there's, there are some associated risks with it as well. So that it is very cool. And, you know, one of the things when you see that old livery of American Airlines the plane is, you're basically looking at the plane unpainted with the American logo painted on it. The argument wasn't that done because the paint weighs down the aircraft and it costs them gasoline miles
fuel miles? I think it was almost like 450 pounds of paint. And that MD-80, the reason why the engines were way in the back, was to reduce drag. Now when you have the engines on the wings and the bottom, that actually increases drag. So this was one of the reasons why they built it that way. But I think as we figured out, the newer, more efficient engines are obviously doing their job. And, you know, real quickly, you mentioned, you know, what I did at United Airlines. One of the things I think I was most proud of was back in the early 90s, when we started flying the 757s, those were two engines. We used to fly planes that went over to Europe. It was either a DC-10 or a 47. But when we started flying the two-engine aircraft called ETOPS, you had to be able to drift down to an alternate airport within 180 minutes, or you couldn't fly the airplane. And that was a big thing, and that took a lot of work from a standpoint of making sure forecasts were right, not only at your destination, but at places like Reykjavik, Iceland, and Lajes in the Azores. Now we're flying freaking 787s 14 straight hours.
Yeah,
and
the efficiency of the engines,
the technology. Yes. Yeah,
right. It really is. I just want to put that back into English for people, Rick, which is that when you get on a plane, they always would have multiple engines, right? That was the idea, they had to be safe.
Right.
But if you had these twin-engine planes, the idea is, what if you lose an engine? And the rule was you had to be I think it was 90 minutes, wasn't it? You had to be within 90 minutes of land.
It went 91, 20, 180. Now we have, a 360-minute rule. You can pretty much fly a one-engine plane for 6 hours. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. All right, well, Rick, congratulations. All kidding aside, congratulations to the university. That's a really cool thing that they have going there. And congratulations to you, and thank you for filling in today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and real quickly,
I gotta go.
Speech. Bye-bye on Saturday.
Goodbye. He's the guy, you push out at the end of the party, right out of your house. All right, we gotta go. Honey! We got the news for Northwestern Medicine Newsman, too. All right, as promised on the Rokan Show, Dr. Willie Wilson is joining us on the Super Celebrity Hotline from Parts Unknown. And we love having you in studio. We love having you here. But I know we had a bit of a scheduling snafu today. So I would like to know this, because you are working on a state piece of legislation for reparations for the descendants of slaves. Now, my question is, shouldn't that be a national thing, not a state thing?
Well, hey, Ro, listen, good to talk to you, but listen, it is a national thing. It's probably passed this year through Congress, but it probably won't get through Senate, all right? And so if we can't get it national, we just got to start working on it state by state, until we can try to get some and get it done. Now, by the way,
let me just ask you. So, what you would then be trying to do is, if you work state by state, to try to have an amendment to the Constitution. I mean, what do you need the states to do?
Well, it represents a descendant of slaves. Meaning this here, look, we got to find ways of in terms of for contracts and job and equal opportunity that represent the tax that people have to pay and don't get anything in return back from it that create and cause violence, and people going to jail for misdemeanor nonviolent, and they got privatized prison system and all that, which need to be and got to be stopped. And so what happened is that if you wait till the national get done, we need to try to be working on it in the state. Chicago got a high violent rate than a lot of places around the United States. And we need to try to find ways of stopping it some kind of way,
Right. But, all right, so you would say preferred, in terms of contracts, if somebody, not just a women and minority-owned business, but on top of that, a business that would be owned by descendants of former slaves would get priority over the other women and minority-owned business kind of contract lets?
First off, so you got to really understand where we're coming from here.
I really
Japan,
don't.
Yeah. To Japan and things like that, descendants of slaves. And got to understand this, too. I am a victim of sharecropping and slavery. Now, I worked for 13 years down south and didn't get paid.
When you were a kid?
When I was a kid. Yeah. My parents and things like that didn't get paid, and ancestors didn't get paid. Now, we were very fortunate and blessed that I got a chance to make it and work hard. And so this thing is really, personal for me because of the fact that there are people that didn't get paid for the work they've done, cotton, corn, sugar, and everything else. And so what happened is that they don't have pension, welfare, they're homeless, some already died, and those type of things there. And so what I try to do is that we give away, as you know, a lot of money to the community.
Right. If people, you know what? I need to set this back up a little bit, because Willie Wilson, you remember him, he ran for mayor. He ran for president of the United States at one point, ran for governor. There is, but your story, your life story is one of the most inspirational American stories one can hear, which is, like you just pointed out, you grew up in a sharecropper family. You worked basically as a slave when you were a little kid. You were able to get out of, that was in Florida. You were able to get out. You ended up working at a McDonald's. You ended up then owning a McDonald's. You then ended up owning multiple McDonald's. You became a multi-millionaire as a result of that. Then you sold that. You went into another business, which made you even more multi-millions of dollars. So, I mean, you're an amazing story that we always talk, you know, that it's an American dream story that people hope for themselves. But what I don't understand is what the economics of your, I get that. And you're a business guy. You know numbers. I don't understand what ultimately the economics are going to be here, or how this actually gets applied fairly, so that if in fact people have been disadvantaged, those who have been, it's not in fact, but those who have been disadvantaged by being the children of slaves or the descendants of slaves, grandchildren, great grandchildren, all that.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the math there? How many people, who gets paid? What do they get paid? I don't understand.
Here. Let me put this to you this way. The state of Illinois, it does about $7 to $80 billion worth of contracts and services. The state of Illinois represents 14% of African American, descendant of slaves. Not everybody is descendant of slaves, but you know, their parents and stuff like that, and kids. Yeah. They get less than 0.5% back into the community that causes ghetto and causes people to rob and things, and they get put in jail, and economically speaking.
Yeah.
All right? This bill will say, hey, look, wait a minute. We 14% of the state, we're putting tax dollars in there. We're not getting enough back. So it's creating a problem within our community from an economic prosperity way. We have our 50-some school closed, just an example, in Chicago. We got to walk, I don't know how many miles to get to school, so we don't have that. We don't have technology in a few schools that is left, all right?
Right.
We don't have that. We don't have trade and things like that to take that we can get a job. So that generation, the next generation or two, is already done gone for the African-American descendant of slaves.
Right.
All right? So we got to find ways of doing something. So if you can take and find the money for Sanctuary City, which, by the way, I think in 2016 or 2015, that was $57 billion.
All right, can you hold, Willie, can you hold on one second for me? Because I got to take quick time out here. I'm already late for this, but I want to come back and explain this part of it. Hold on.
Okay.
Don't move. That's Dr. Willie Wilson right there. We'll be back with him in just a moment. But first, Lauren Lapka will try to explain what's happening on the roads and in the skies. Thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
Dr. Willie Wilson is with us, and he's got a plan. Now, I want to go back through this because I want to, for people who are just joining us, I want to see if we can explain this. And I've been trying to figure it out, and now I think I understand what you're proposing here in terms of reparations. You're trying to get a reparations bill passed in Illinois, which would give preference to the descendants of slaves. And obviously there would have to be some sort of provability there, I guess, right? I mean, I don't know how. There have to be records of that?
Well, yeah. Well, there are certain records on me and my particular parents. I went back and did my record, but I didn't necessarily have to do a record because I worked for 13 years without getting paid.
Yeah. Okay. So that would be, and there, and then 20th century Jim Crow, sharecroppers, all that sort of stuff. That's true. That they would also be covered under this because most of those people were descendants of slaves anyway, right? 99% of them would have been. So,
absolutely right.
Now, what happens to these people? This is the question. So now, let's say you are All right, so you're a descendant of slaves. Now you're a multimillionaire, so that's less important for you. But you've, let's say we go, we're going to Lawndale, North Lawndale, and we find a family, and they've got a landscaping business, and they would be able to attract, because they would be the descendant of slaves, they would get priority for public contracts. Is that what you want to do?
Well, not only go further than that. It's not just about a check by itself, all right? But they have to have the necessary dollars and the funds that they can get it from. You can call it a grant and get in there and work and start that business, but also get contract to the state or the city, whatever it may be. In this case, it's the state of Illinois, that they can begin to make a living, because even if you got a low entry loan rate, you ain't got no money to make first get-go, so how you going to qualify that? And if you got a record and bad credit, it still messed up. All right. So, but in essence, that it's paying for reparations, just like we did for Japan. Japan, for example, when they bombed Pearl Harbor, what America and everything else, Japan got back over that $300 billion in gold. All right, and plus rebuilt that country. All right, and so you look at the Native America, the same thing. All right, but you put all that together, because see, we pay more money today for people who being out of work, in prison system, hiring more police officers and everything, as opposed to figuring out a way to train people, give trade, and then go to college and get an education and do those type of things. All right, we'll pay less money that way, plus we become productive society in terms of getting a good education is cool, just like anybody else.
All right. What's the next step on this in terms of the real legislation? Is there a bill that's been drafted?
The bill been drafted. We ought to pay for it. Representative Will David is going to present it in February, and Senator Matt Hunter is going to present it in the Senate. All right. What we're doing now, we're trying to get co-sponsor. We're doing advertising and everything else. We'll getting out people organized, both white, black, Latina, the whole nine yards, and trying to make sure this is a reality. So it's one way to me to take to and try to help the community on a bigger scale and bring down the violence and things like that, you know? It is a role. It's something that we got to deal with as the people, you know?
Oh, there's no question about that.
We can sit down and start talking, not to just to prejudge and say, hey, there's somebody looking for something but nothing. No. You know, descendant of slaves, got to understand, was brought over here by force, all right? But same token is that there got to be some conversation and find ways to correct this thing and change this whole situation, that everybody then can have an opportunity to make the American dream like myself. Now, I don't want it because I made it. This doesn't apply to me because I'm already okay, all right? But the ones that have died, and the one that homeless on the street, the one got no Social Security because they made no money to have Social Security taken out. What about all those people there?
That's the question. That's the multi-billion-dollar question that we ask ourselves in this country, but in this city specifically, especially after every weekend, and you see what the violence numbers are, and you wonder, you know, when is this ever going to end, and how do we interrupt this cycle of violence? I understand the idea of giving opportunity and, you know, hope for opportunity in neighborhoods and teaching economic principles and teaching business principles and those sorts of things. And there's a lot of young kids that understand that, you know, based on the businesses that they're in the streets, kind of understand, you know, the basic business principles. I make the argument that, you know, when we're doing all these marijuana licenses now, that kids who, you know, are going to be coming out of jail or out of state prison for just only being involved in the marijuana industry, you know, I'll bet you that they would be very good in the actual legitimate marijuana industry. They did that a lot with guys who were bootleggers in the 1930s, you know, who came out and got involved in the liquor industry when it became legal. So I think there are opportunities to turn that around, to use the momentum of that to turn that around. I just, would think that you want to make sure that people who are going to get a chance, you want to give grants, but you want to give a grant where people are actually going to be responsible for the money that they've been granted. Because like you said, you don't just want to give money to people to just say, all right, well, you were a descendant of slaves. Here's your money. And nothing happens to it in a positive way, right? It doesn't actually help the family. What you're trying to do is it's an each one teach one thing where you want the community to build upon itself. And you can't just do that unless there are rules surrounding the money that's granted and then offering jobs. And like you said, getting people involved in businesses that actually could grow a family and then neighborhoods and all the rest of it. So, and they would have to stay in the neighborhoods too, I think.
Well, not only that role, you got to understand this, too. The average family in Chicago, state of Illinois, right now, make $34,000 a year, and the average white family makes $64,000 a year, and the average Latino family makes $46,000 a year. So African-American family is making what the white family made 75 to 80 years ago. The math doesn't add up, you know, and it's getting worse and worse. Now, the marijuana thing, here again, it was given to 11 white first, no black, and now the black been put in jail and locked up. Now they get out of jail, they got to come and buy to white.
I just gave you the solution for that, though. I think I have a solution for that because, and I understand what happened there, too, because, well, first of all, they weren't just given. These are people who applied and risked $250,000 to get those licenses of the application fee to get a marijuana distribution license back when they were doing medical marijuana and then advancing into the now the legal marijuana. They would have to put up a $250,000 application fee, which was non-refundable if they didn't get the license. So that was a barrier. That was a barrier to entry for a lot of smaller businesses, and I'm sure. But you also had to have experience in the business too, which was a whole other situation. All right, we've run out of time, but I just want to say I want you to come in studio next whenever the next iteration of this
is. I'm coming next week. Just when Jeff gets me back on that next week, because I want to sit in person and kind of bring this. I'm going to bring you a lot of figures too. You know,
right. I know you will.
I'm going to do this.
I know you will. All right, Willie Wilson, thank you, sir. Appreciate it, as always.
Thank you.
All right, there he goes, Dr. Willie Wilson. It's always something with him. He's running for something, or he's running to advocate for something. And I don't know if this will work exactly as he describes it, but I just love hearing him describe it. Okay, got a pair of tickets in just a few minutes, right after the news. Coming your way, chance to win a pair of tickets to go see America's Got Talent winner, Terry Fader. He is a ventriloquist, an impressionist, a comedian, a singer. He's going to be at the Paramount Theater on Saturday night. Get tickets right now at ParamountAurora.com if you want to see that. I got a pair of free tickets for you coming your way around the corner. And also around the corner, we are going to be discussing the doomsday clock because it has moved. We're now only 111 seconds away from doomsday. Now, I first mentioned that an hour and a half ago, and still there's been no doomsday. So I don't fully understand it, but we're going to have one of the people from the doomsday, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, the people who actually do the doomsday clock, and they'll explain to exactly what the issue is and why we have gotten to where we have gotten. As I don't know if that's proper grammar, but I think you understand what I mean. So we'll do that as well. And then in the 5 o'clock hour, we got a top five of five. You won't believe it. And our attorney, our legal analyst, Mike Monaco, will be here to play one of my favorite game shows, Is This Legal? So I think everybody should stay tuned for that. Because it turns out that the answer to all of that is no, especially when people call, you know, My ma died, but I still collected her Social Security for the next 12 and a half years. Is that legal? I think we know the answer. All right, we got the news right now from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Here is Kim Gordon. Just heard in the news, you'll be hearing it on all newscasts throughout the day, that the doomsday clock is now at its shortest period of time before doomsday. Since they started keeping this kind of a record. It's a bulletin of the atomic scientists. That's the organization that puts this doomsday clock out. They came up with this concept during the Cold War in order to alert people to the notion that because of nuclear proliferation and other issues, that time is short for humans if we don't get our act straight. And we have with us one of the people who was involved in this, Air Force Major General retired Robert Latiff. And General, thank you so much for being with us. Who are the
people? Happy to be here. Thank you.
Talk to me a little bit about the kinds of people, the resumes of the people who put this together. Obviously, you're a retired Major General of the Air Force, so you're obviously familiar with thermonuclear war and other kinds of geopolitical issues. Are there climate scientists? Are there epidemiologists? Who else is on this board?
Well, yes, good question. As a matter of fact, today at the event, we had our climate scientist. Siobhan was sitting next to me. Very accomplished, very much involved in international work in climate. Several nuclear physicists who also have had experience in the U.S. national laboratories. In the audience, who you didn't see, we had a couple of experts in cyber warfare, Dr. Herb Lin from Stanford. And then we had very accomplished biologist who is involved deeply now in a lot of the bioweapons work. So it's a very eclectic, a very accomplished group. I was happy to be a part of it.
So, General, let's talk about what the dynamics are that go into this. Why would you say that the doomsday clock has been moved up to 100 seconds, which is the closest it's ever been to nuclear midnight, or whatever we want to call that? What are the factors that have done that?
Well, the factors that existed last year when we set it at 2 minutes, the nuclear factor, the climate factor, the information warfare, have not changed, and in fact, in several cases, have gotten worse. And we all know about pulling out of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty. We know about the issues with the agreement with Iran. We know about pulling out of the Paris climate. So all of those things, none of those things got any better. And what got worse was our ability and our desire to deal with them. And so a disdain for expert opinion, dismantling of some of the science advisory committees. And so what we felt was that not only here, but all over the world, world leaders have dismissed the idea that we need a control weapon. And so all of those factors go into making a judgment of, are we better off than we were last year? And collectively, and by the way, this is a fairly lengthy process. We collectively said no, we're in worse shape than we were last year.
So, General, the issue of nuclear weapons sort of has lost it's not anywhere in the top 10 anymore of the worries of Americans as it was during the Cold War and at other subsequent times in American history since 1945. It seems that we've lost our concern about that because that whole idea that the Russians or the Chinese, but primarily the Russians, were just going to launch on us, or we were going to launch on them, and that was always the theme of all of the scare of the 1950s and the 1960s. That seems less likely. Now, you think about North Korea, they seem to have limited capability. Iran, even if they were to get a nuclear weapon, would have limited capability to strike the United States. So what... And now, and what is interesting, and people don't really know so much about, is the fact that we now have hypersonic missiles in development, hypersonic delivery vehicles, actually, because they're not really missiles, that are being developed by the Russians. And as a matter of fact, Putin was just out boasting about his, and I know that the president mentioned our development system as well. It seems like, and that is going to shorten the time that it would take to actually strike some place, and there would be, at this point, there would be no anti-ballistic weapons to take them out. So does that also add to this doomsday clock shortening?
Well, yeah. In fact, yes, it did. And the question of hypersonics and some of those technologies were really the kind of things that I spoke with the board about. But to your point earlier, yes, you know, the Cold War, we were worried about it. And the problems between Russia and the U.S. and China still exist. But what people don't quite get is that, yes, North Korea now actually does have delivery systems that can reach the United States. And when a nuclear war breaks out anywhere in the world, it's going to be a catastrophe for the whole world. And, you know, proliferation is something that people are not paying much attention to.
Right.
The growing number of people who have weapons is a serious problem, and that goes into the judgment call about the clock. So, and hypersonic weapons, yes, hypersonic weapons, you know, they can deliver either conventional or nuclear, and going as fast as they are, it isn't clear to me that you actually need a nuclear warhead.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of energy, so.
Yeah, kinetics. General, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Air Force retired Major General Robert Latiff, who is one of the people who is in the organization that moved the doomsday clock from 2 minutes to 100 seconds. It took 20 seconds off, and that's a top story all over the country today. As a matter of fact, top trending story. Thank you very much, General. Thanks for your time. Let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roads and in the skies? News coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom at the top of the hour. And the top five at five right after that, including one of the top five at five entries, will be the woman who ran the Grammy, the organization that issues the Grammys. And she's saying the whole thing is rigged. How about that? Tell that to Taylor Swift now. Tell that to Kanye. See, he was onto something. I'm not even sure that was a Grammy. Was that the Grammys where that happened? I can't even remember. But whatever it is, that you know that Kanye, all of a sudden, I'm telling you, Kanye for president in 2024, you think I'm crazy. I swear. I mean, look at where we are. It could happen. It could happen. All right. And right now, caller number 19, 312-917-2200, rips us off for a pair of tickets to go see Terry Fader. He's America's Got Talent winner, Terry Fader, ventriloquist, impressionist, comedian, singer at Aurora's Paramount Theater on Saturday. ParamountAurora.com for tickets if you want to buy them right now. Caller number 19, 312-981-7200. All right. This story crossed my desk today. I thought it was very interesting. Remember, you know, years and years and years ago, in the early 1990s, secondhand smoke became an issue that parents smoking around their kids could be doing damage to their kids because the kids were inhaling just, you know, the smoke that was in the ambient atmosphere around the kids when the parents were smoking all the way through that. So they didn't have to take the tobacco directly into their lungs, the smoke directly into their lungs. They were just getting enough of it from being around it. Now, science says that kids are getting the same effect by being around their parents who are on their screens. So by watching parents and caregivers and other people around their lives, little kids, and they see that people are touching their phones, on their phones, staring at their phones, having their fingers do all the talking, their thumbs do all the talking, as it turns out, that is the secondhand smoke of the 21st century. This is a shocking, shocking number. On average, American adults touch their phones how many times a day? I will ask you, Kevin, how many times a day do you think?
400.
Lauren?
Oh, that's kind of high. I was thinking more like 150.
2,500 times a day.
Whoa.
2,500 times a day. That's according to the American Psychiatric Association. I'm a fine member. Patient division. It fits the definition of addiction, according to them. A condition in which a person engages in the use of a substance or a behavior which is rewarding, has rewarding effects, provides a compelling incentive. Right? I mean, that's addiction.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened here.
Aren't we all kind of addicted to our phones?
Completely.
I mean, 100%.
But the kids are, especially. You know, it's so weird. You go to a restaurant and you see more kids in restaurants than you've ever seen them, and they're quieter than they've ever been.
Yeah, because they just get handed an iPad and they zone out.
Right.
It actually quiets them down.
It's the perfect thing. It's mommy's little helper, finally.
It is. It's like a personal assistant via iPad.
Yes, and they do. But you know what happens, though? God forbid the battery goes out.
Yeah.
This is the one thing the parent must do before you go to the restaurant with the child. You have to make sure you got to be over 60%. Because especially on the games, right? So the video part is going to drain that battery fairly quickly, especially the older. You always give the kids the oldest iPad or the oldest tablet, whatever you got in the house, or the oldest phone. You take it offline, and you give it to them, and they got stuff that's already preloaded. And just think at what we are doing to the ability of people to function without them. I was at lunch today with our friends Kristen and David Berryhill, as a matter of fact, from Architect. And David was telling me, when he goes in to meetings, any kind of sales meeting, whatever it is, he leaves his phone in the car. He will not take his phone in.
So he doesn't have the temptation to take it out?
Yeah.
Badly.
I thought that was fascinating. Because I was thinking to myself, you know what? I don't actually do it that way. I actually take my phone in. You know, it's like, this is a truism. Sometimes you just pull it out and you just start staring at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is incredibly disrespectful to the people that you're with.
Yeah.
Right? And I've noticed, like, at dinner, that the cell phone really is the new cigarette. You know, when I was a kid, there was actual smoking in restaurants and stuff like that, or your parents smoked. After dinner, that was the first thing they did. As soon as they pushed the plate away, they lit up a cigarette, and then they, you know, would just drink whatever they were drinking, whether it was, you know, wine, beer, drink, water, whatever it was, and they would just have the cigarette. And then look at each other and start talking. But now, it's the cell phone. You pull out the cell phone. As soon as you're done, if the other person isn't done, it doesn't matter. You're pulling out the cell phone. Hey, let me check and see who's interested in something I just did on Instagram.
So the only solution is to bring back smoking after meals.
Exactly.
I mean, there are times where I find myself scrolling through Twitter for like 30 seconds, click the little side home button, put it down, and pick it back up 5 seconds later and scroll through Instagram. I'm totally guilty of it. I think everybody is. And then you put it away, and then you pick it back up, you go back to Twitter. And then maybe you check like a news cycle. It's crazy.
We don't sit still well, that's for sure.
No.
Well, and kids never sat still well. And now they are sitting still because we're handing them the device.
I did see an interesting cartoon the other day of a dad saying, "Do you want me to text you a bedtime story?" It was kind of sad.
Right. Well, it's true, though. And I wonder when I see that, you know, my daughter just kind of missed that. She was coming in. The cell phone, the screen of the iPhone and things like that, the tablet-esque cell phone was coming in when she was a teenager. So that was already, that was a foregone deal. But when she was like three, I'm compelled to say, I wish that had been around. Because her other way of entertaining herself was either taking shots from the dairy creamer that was on the table, or throwing the rolls at people from across the room, always causing the trouble.
It does seem like there's less fighting if you're at a restaurant, because all I remember is like if we were at a fancy dinner, me, my brothers, my sisters, my cousins, it was just like us just going nuts the whole time, fighting or running through the halls or running around the circles in the restaurant.
Yeah, they don't do it anymore.
I don't see it as much.
That's just crazy.
Is that a bad thing, though?
Well, according to the American Psychiatric Association, it is. They're saying, I mean, I want to give you that statistic again. They say that we touch our phones 2,500 times a day.
Think of the germs.
I don't touch anything 2,500 times a day. Although I got accused of that a lot when I was a kid. But still, 2,500 times a day. And I think they're counting your thumb touching it when you're actually typing something out. I think that's the only way you can get to that. Because there's not enough minutes in the day. But the phone is either always in your hand.
Or by you.
And that's the thing that, you know, you reach. What's the first thing when you wake up in the morning you reach at?
Phone.
Right? What's the last thing you touch before you fall asleep?
I'm not going to answer that.
All right. coming up, a top five at five that you will not believe. News from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Another chance, by the way, to rip us off before we're all out of here today for tickets to go see Terry Fader at the ParamountAurora.com. Paramount Aurora, but ParamountAurora.com is where you get tickets for that. That is such a beautiful theater. And Terry Fader, one of the hottest acts. One of the hottest acts in Las Vegas. You get off the airplane, and it's just nothing but Terry Fader kinds of items, when all the billboards. So an opportunity to see a guy, big Las Vegas, becoming a legend right here in the Chicago area. Your chance comes your way in the 5 o'clock hour. Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is where Kim is at in 2 minutes. Radio Chicago.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rocon Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
It is the top five at five, the five most important, entertaining, or wacky things that you could hear on any given day. And that today would be today. Today. Okay. Checking in at. Checking in. See the technicals.
Classic technical difficulty.
I don't know what's going on with the technicals around here. Why the technicals? Let's try this again. Checking in at
number five.
Today, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists moves the hands of the doomsday clock. It is 100 seconds to midnight. The world has entered into a realm of a 2-minute warning, a period when danger is high and the margin for error is low.
Yeah, she didn't really sell that to me. I don't know why, but she was reading it. In every Armageddon movie, every the apocalyptic movie, they're not reading it. They're screaming at you about it. Oh my God, the doomsday clock's in 100 seconds.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
We're running. Get out for your lives. That's what I would have done if I were.
Where are we going though?
I don't know. Don't worry about it. I'll think about that after I panic.
I need Morgan Freeman delivering a dramatic speech to all of us. That really set the tone.
Hug your children and your families. All right. But it turned out that worked out. This is the problem. And we're trained by all of the end of world, end of days movies that it's okay. There's going to be a tomorrow. Except on that day after tomorrow. That was bad. That one did not end well. But pretty... Oh, and Planet of the Apes was kind of weird, the way it ended. Okay, so, turns out it was an apocalypse movie. We didn't realize it until the final scene. So, here's the deal. The Bulletin adjusted the clock to reflect the looming threats, it says here, of nuclear weapons, accelerated global warming, former California Governor Jerry Brown. Now, this guy, always known for being on the side of, oh, my God, it's all coming to an end, even from the 1960s. I mean, Jerry Brown has been governor on and off of California for all of our lives, essentially. He was Governor Moonbeam back in the 1970s. And he was also, I think it was with Linda Ronstadt, right? He was like a celebrity governor who was dating a rock star. Very weird. Anyway, here's the point. So, Governor Moonbeam today, who seldom finds himself at a loss for words, this is his take. Listen to this.
If there's one in 100 chances that these men and women before you are correct, then we are truly in a dangerous moment. But you would never know that from the president, from the Republican leadership, or even from the Democratic leadership. Talking about what we're talking about today is profoundly deviant to our contemporary culture. We're not supposed to be here. We're not supposed to utter the truth about the power of mankind to destroy itself.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Wait, is that Jerry Brown singing? Because that would have been kind of a cool moment. That's a good way to actually punctuate your thought. Right? Well, he didn't end there.
Now, people will say, what, you know, that's not serious. Well, the moment is serious. Tell me how else can we tell people where we're at? How else can we wake up the Democrats, the Republicans, the independents, the millionaires, the billionaires, the media owners, who carry on their life as though it's they're on the Titanic?
It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine.
I think that's the problem. And I feel fine. Yes, I know. And they've been doing this forever. Our whole lives, again, there's been this doomsday clock. It's at the University of Chicago. It's the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists that put it together. We just had one of the guys who's one of the voting members of the Academy on who does all of this. And they won't talk about how they vote, though. It's interesting. They talk about what the factors are, and he mentioned nuclear technology and the fact that there's new hypersonic missiles or vehicles, as they call them, that would be able to deliver across the globe a delivery within minutes, short minutes, under 5 minutes. The Russians are developing this. We're developing this. There's the Iranian nuclear deal. There's the North Koreans. That's all of that. And then there's also the global warming piece. So, yes, if this doesn't match your politics, then it's going to, you know, you're going to just roll your eyes at it. But when you stop and you think about all the ways that we could screw this thing up, it does you know, it kind of does get your attention.
I'm panicking, Ron.
I can hear it in your voice, Kevin. Coming up on the Top 5 and 5, are the Grammys rigged? This I'm going to tell you, this is the story of the week right here. Because the Grammys are on Sunday, so it's a good promotion for CBS and the Grammys presentation.
That should move the Sunday doomsday clock.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe, hopefully REM will be there. All right, we've got the 4-3-2-1 next. But first, Lauren Lapka's got the WGN traffic and weather.
When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN-TV.
He's got zonal flows right now. This is what he's discussing as I look up at my screen. He's got a bunch of arrows, and they're all flowing. I like when he does that flow map. Right? It's like when you put the streamers on a fan, and they move in a different direction. Very exciting.
He's such a weather geek.
All right. Checking in. Zonal Flow, by the way, was my rap name, as you recall, in the 1990s. Remember that?
Couple of hits.
Yeah.
Number four.
Minor hits. Weren't big hits. Speaking of music, listen to this. There's trouble at the Grammys with just 3 days to go before the big telecast. And it really is the best of the award shows in terms of entertainment. I mean, there's like the Oscars, especially now that there's no host. You know, it's kind of depressing. Because you remember when, like, there would be musical numbers or something that would be kind of funny at the top, or a film piece that would be funny at the top. And now that everybody's afraid to be a host in the post I'm mad at you era of American history, that's not so exciting. I mean, I watch it anyway religiously because I want to see who wins and who loses and what the wacky speeches are. But it's just, as a TV show, it isn't what it used to be. And the Golden Globes are entertaining because everybody's drunk. SAG Awards are kind of boring. The Tonys, I have no idea what's going on there. It's very exciting because it's, you know, it's a bunch of like musical numbers, but I haven't seen any of those and probably never will, so I'm not exactly sure what I'm interested in. And the Emmys, you know, there's just so much television. And actually, they don't even honor television at the Emmys anymore. They're just honoring things on Netflix. I know it's on your TV, but yeah, if you watch just regular network television, you're like, none of your shows are on. But anyway, back to the Grammys. So the ousted Recording Academy CEO, Deborah Dugan, the first female chief of the Academy that issues the Grammys, says that she was fired for exposing sexual harassment, nomination rigging, and a toxic boys club that sidelined women and minority groups. The Recording Academy alleging it was Dugan who created a toxic and intolerable work environment. Now they're just yelling at each other, saying, quote, they immediately launched independent investigations to review both Ms. Dugan's potential misconduct and her subsequent allegations. Dugan went on Good Morning America. Oh, that's interesting, on ABC, trying to screw over CBS on the Sunday night ratings. You know it is, Sweeves. It's very important for them. She went on, Good Morning America, saying that she was sexually harassed by the Academy's general counsel.
At the very onset, in fact, under the guise of a work dinner, I was propositioned by the general counsel, an entertainment lawyer of enormous, enormous power in the industry.
Mr. Katz.
Yes.
He categorically denies those allegations, says you got the dinner completely wrong.
Yes, well, starting with calling me babe and saying how attractive I was and pretty I was, the evening went on to trying to kiss me, and all the way through, I felt like I was being tested in how much would I acquiesce. And I realized that that was a power-setting move just on the onset as I was coming into the committee.
Okay. Now, she also says this, though, about the nominating process at the Grammys.
So are you saying that when we're all watching the Grammys this Sunday, we should be thinking the fix is in, this is rigged?
I'm saying that the system should be transparent and that there are incidents of conflict of interest that taints the results. I couldn't say more positive things about all of the nominations and everybody that performs. And, oh, my God, I hate that I'm in this situation because I'd much rather be here talking about the artists and the music. But I can't help but have to say there are conflicts of interest.
This is the worst. This is the worst promotion for the Grammys interview ever. Don't watch the show. There's sexual harassers, and the whole damn thing's rigged. Kanye was right, though. Kanye was right. It shouldn't have been Taylor Swift. Look at that. Kanye for president.
Number three.
Since joining the NHL in 2007, Patrick Kane continues to have a long, illustrious career, honored for being the 90th player in NHL history to get to 1,000 points, fourth member of the Hawks to do so. In a lead-up to announcing their first and second all-decade teams tomorrow, the NHL has awarded Kane, listen to this, this is super cool, the goal of the decade. That's the single goal of the decade. Anybody want to guess what that is? Which goal that was?
I'm going to guess the 2010 Stanley Cup game-winning goal.
That would be correct, Kevin Powell. Here it is.
Ladd wedged off the puck. Puck taken back by Campbell. Left point. Drops it to Kane on the left half-boards. Here's Kane now. Juking his way to the right lower left corner. Should he score? Oh, no, that's turned wide by Leighton. Loose puck in the crease. And now it's in the net. They score!
It's in!
The Hawks win the Stanley Cup! The Hawks win the Stanley Cup. Leighton is down on his knees in the goal crease. And that one looked like it slid past him into the net. They're going to go and take a look. They're going to take a look upstairs. But everybody on the ice, nobody knew where the puck was. Leighton froze in the goal crease. Let's see what we have
here.
It's
in the back of the net.
It's in the back of the net. The Hawks have won the Stanley Cup. Blackhawk fans around the world, you've endured 49 years of frustration. But your patience has finally paid off. Lord Stanley's new address is Sweet Home Chicago. The Chicago Blackhawks have won the Stanley Cup. They've won the Stanley Cup. It's over, they did it.
It's such a great call by Weidemann.
It's the best. Maybe the best. That should be the best radio call in NHL history.
You know what I remember from that? Patrick Kane was the only person in the building that knew where the puck went in when it did.
Right.
Nobody knew it went in. Not a single person except Kane.
Only one celebrating.
Who's the only one celebrating? He threw his gloves in the air. Even his teammates were like, wait a second, dude. And he's just going nuts. He was the only one. That gave me chills right there listening to that.
It was just, for me, it was the greatest moment in Chicago sports of my lifetime. I know the Cubs winning the World Series is pretty great, and the Bears winning the Super Bowl, but the Bears won the Super Bowl 5 minutes into the first quarter of that game against the Patriots in January of 1986. So that was not really, you know, a fair estimation of like excitement. The fact that that goal, and we were all standing around at a restaurant, and it was an appearance for Bobby Hull at the Harry Carey's at Navy Pier. And I was standing next to Bobby Hull, and all the cameras were around him watching this. And he turned to me after the shot on goal. He turned to me and he goes, "What happened?" And I just looked up and I realized what had happened. I go, "We just won the Stanley Cup. We, like I was on the team." And he started to cry. It's my greatest moment ever in my life. I know the birth of my child and all that. Yeah, everybody says that. That was the greatest moment of my life. Checking in at. I will hear about that, by the way. I just want to let you know. Shouldn't have said that on the radio.
Number two.
Lyft got together with the producers of Bad Boys, the movie, which is it's a hit. That's a hit. And they got Will Smith to drive a Lyft and pick up passengers and surprise them. And the passengers were being told that they were checking out a new technology, and then the next thing you know.
Hey, I'm your Lyft driver. I don't have all day to be waiting. Get in. What's up? How you doing?
This is super cool. This just got super cool.
What if this person was a criminal? We just rolling up on somebody. What if that person was a criminal?
You gotta look in the back. You gotta ask her a cop question. Zakiya, ask her something.
You good? You good?
Zakiya, serious face. Zakiya, you gonna get us killed out here. Give me your best. Freeze!
Freeze on the
That's how, that's okay. Right, we just pulled somebody over. Now you tell them, get down on the ground right now.
Hey, Poppy, you want to get down or what?
Come on. You can't be calling him Poppy. You're going to be in internal affairs, and he's going to be, that's going to be that you sexually harassed him.
I is nothing.
They'll do anything to promote a movie. Not sure I fully understood. Was it a police car that he arrived in? Oh, it's a Porsche with police lights. Okay, got it. And also had the whoop-whoop sort of thing going there, too. I've got to get that for my car. I like the idea. Or in Chicago, the horn is, right? I think I'm just going to record that and have that played when I pull up in the Blazer in back of a car that's not moving. I love that. Or that's like double parked. Every Uber in North America is double parked in Chicago. Every single one. Every afternoon, Monday through Friday in Chicago. And it's even worse on the weekends. And I just want to have the ability to get behind one of those things. I don't care what kind of car I'm in. Just make that noise, because that always scares people. I know it's probably illegal, but I've already ruined my life with everything else I've said here today on this program. I will be hearing from my daughter about that. What? Bobby Hull is more important to you than I am? And finally,
number one.
Jim Lehrer, legendary debate moderator, former anchor of the NewsHour on PBS, has died. While best known for his anchor work, which he shared for two decades with his colleague Robert McNeil, Lehrer moderated a dozen presidential debates and was the author of more than 25 novels, which often drew on his reporting experience. He also wrote four plays, three memoirs. Critics called Mr. Lehrer's reporting and his collaborations with Mr. McNeil solid journalism. It's probably the last time that those words have been used to describe a television news program. He was committed to fair, unbiased, far more detailed reporting than the major networks or nightly news programs. The two anchors interviewed world and national leaders, experts on politics, law, business, arts, and sciences. He graduated from Missouri School of Journalism in 1956. Last year, he was inducted in the Mizzou Alumni Association Hall of Fame. This is what he told students about the role journalism plays in American history.
I feel good about what I have done. I make no apologies. I make apologies for the mistakes I have made. Anybody who practices journalism has got to come to grips with the fact that you're not going to get it right every time. But you've got to understand when you make a mistake, and you've got to acknowledge it. And that's an attitude I also learned at Missouri, and I never, never, ever lost it. And it was one of the cardinal rules of our little program on PBS. So I would say to you, In conclusion, here's what we did in 1956. Missouri, Tigers, go!
Yeah. it was really something. I had the great pleasure to interview him a couple of times when he was on book tours for the many, 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 many books that he wrote. And he was a gentleman, And it was it is interesting because I don't think that show could actually survive in today's television world because it was very deliberate. It was not flashy. Things didn't move on the screen. He didn't have all the mechanics that they use now to try to keep your attention. It was just telling a story. Facts first. Jim Lehrer was 85.
The top five at five.
Rokan Show, 720 WGN. Our legal analyst, Michael Monaco, has stepped into the studio.
How are you, Ro?
Official legal analyst of the Rokan Show, unpaid
yes.
position.
Oh, yes.
I want to point out that Bob Surratt, had a lawyer, helping people with their legal problems.
He did?
On the radio today.
Oh, good.
I mean, it's obviously he's, stealing the bit.
But
he does it a little differently. Oh, people are calling about,
the real problem.
Yeah.
Real legitimate
they're
problems.
They're getting sued. They're not suing somebody.
They're not asking if they can do something really horrible.
Right.
They're going to ask us.
Yeah, we do this version of Ask the Lawyer very differently.
Yes.
It's called Is This Legal?
Yeah, exactly.
And we have people call and they ask a question and
we don't think they're calling from prison. I don't think most of them are calling from prison.
Well, you hear the beep if they're calling from prison.
Yeah,
there's that too.
You got that. Unless they have a cell phone. Unless they sneak a cell phone in there.
Yeah, and they have to hide that cell phone. So
okay.
I don't really want to think about what happened there.
Right.
Anyway, so that's one of the things. But I do want to throw a couple. So if you want to do that, 312-91-7200, you're considering doing something, but
please,
you're not sure it's legal.
Please be careful calling in. Don't
you mean
ask
what?
Don't ask anything.
Pull over before they do it? What do you
really,
mean?
Really? Pull over, right. Pull over and don't ask anything that'll get anybody in trouble.
Yes.
Please.
Well, right.
Yes.
See, they don't know that until I'm already in trouble for it.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Although I do have this delay thing in case it gets really out of control.
All right, okay.
And we've done this before, and Mike will sometimes say, hit the delay! Yes. Hit the delay!
I normally say, no way! You can't do that! Are you crazy?
Hey, I want to ask you about a couple cases that are going on right now.
Okay.
You got the Harvey Weinstein case that's going on in New York.
There's a live witness there today.
Yep.
Talked about Harvey... I think, 93 or 94, she claims that he...
Annabella Sciorra, right?
Annabella Sciorra, formerly from Sopranos.
Yeah, and a bunch of other stuff, right?
Yeah,
And exactly the kind of actress that he was going after, these indie actresses that, were considered to be not just model actresses, but they were going to be, like, they needed their break.
Well,
and because
the women on his list are more than just indie actresses. They're... I mean, it's everybody.
Yes.
I mean, they had 80 women, allegedly.
Yeah. Well, okay. So now there was testimony today that he injected himself with a Viagra-esque kind of substance before he forced himself on a woman in a hotel room in 2013. So these are not just 25-year-old allegations. I mean, that's...
That was in the opening statement?
Yep.
Okay.
The incident occurred several months into Weinstein's relationship with this woman.
The two women under... in the case and they mentioned their names, so we can mention their names, Miriam Haley and Jessica Mann. Miriam Haley, who worked for him full-time, says in 2006 there was an assault, and Jessica Mann says in 2013, as you correctly mentioned, that she's going to say that he committed sexual assault on her.
Well, now it's interesting because they were in a relationship, but she now claims that he did inject himself with this drug and that he was demeaning and violent during their encounters.
Due to the intoxication or due to the drug that he just injected himself?
No, I think he just was,
That's his nature.
He was violent.
That's sort of his nature. Well, that's too bad. See, apparently, now, you may ask, well, why did they bring the case from 93 or 94? And because in New York, you have to prove he's charged with predatory sexual assault, which means... You have to prove more than one person. You have to prove that he did this with... Now they're going to show he did it with three or four people. And so that's why they're allowed to bring in people beyond the two women who are actually charged in the indictment.
I mean, the thing is that each story could be picked apart, right, by the lawyers here. They try to go after them.
Has and will be.
Yeah, and they have been in this case. Like I said, that, you know, the defense lawyers are claiming that this woman had a relationship with him, and that this was an incident that happened when he showed up at a hotel that she didn't expect him to be at, and he forced himself into the room and forced himself upon her. The question is the raw numbers here. Is that going to be the case?
Raw numbers are not going to get in evidence, I don't think. I don't think the raw numbers. You mean the 80 women?
Yeah.
They're not going to get in evidence. They're going to just going to put in three or four.
But three or four women who have the same. Let's just even go down to the three or four women who have the same story.
Right.
Will that be enough, even if each story tries to get pierced?
Well, it will.
These
see.
Are harder to prosecute than.
Well, you're right.
There
are no forensic evidence. There's no forensic evidence. There are no photographs at the time showing that a woman was injured. But, I mean, the same story being told over and over again, not unlike with other similarly situated defendants, like Mr. Cosby, you know, leads to a problem for the defendant.
Yes, right. It shows a pattern.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll come right back with Mike Monaco and Is This Legal? And a couple of other cases I want to throw at you that are going on, too. But first, let's find out from Lauren Lapko what's happening in the traffic and the weather. It's the Rogan Show right here on 720 WGN. Our esteemed legal analyst, Mr. Michael Monaco, attorney at law, no case too big or too small, has been our legal analyst for a quarter century, unpaid position the entire time.
Yeah, that's true.
Never got paid
well
the entire
said.
Time.
As a matter of fact, right. There's been even some free legal advice, I think, given it
well,
thrown
I,
in during that period of time.
That is not true.
Although you did buy me dinner once.
I did buy you dinner once, and I did actually have to pay a bill for you once when I got hauled into federal court. But that's a separate issue.
Yeah.
But there is, but it should be. It should
that
be.
That was
noted.
Really more of a. A fraternity prank, I think, than really a crime.
Stop. You know what I'm saying? That's what I said to the judge.
Exactly.
You remember?
Exactly.
That's what you said, Your Honor. I consider this
really,
to have been a prank, not really a crime, which is why we like to play this game. Is it legal?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So I bring you in because there's a couple of other legal things that are going that are happening here. I will ask you very quickly. I know that you've had a piece of the stuff that surrounded the president here. You were Michael Cohen's lawyer for a while. You were also Jesse Smollett's lawyer, and that has nothing to do with the president. I don't know how that actually
That's
works.
That's true.
Do you, as you're watching this impeachment thing, this is not a legal trial, right?
No.
This is just a political trial.
No. Someone said that today, I think, the other day, that this is really just about politics.
Right. And there's really not going to be, I think that the chances of a...
Real witnesses is slim.
Right. And then the chance of removal is very slim. Because
it sounds like it.
Yes.
They need 51 votes, and that's... Actually, they need well,
no,
more.
No,
they
no,
need
no,
60.
No. They need two. Yeah, two
they need
thirds.
60 votes.
67 votes. Actually.
67 votes.
So that's going to be. It's a heavy lift,
right, exactly.
I think, to be able to get that in an election.
But even to get witnesses, though, if you have 51
votes,
you could get a witness if you have 51 votes.
Right. And we'll know more about that in the next day or two, right? Because that's what the plan is. All right. So a teacher has. Sued a school district because she was denied
bad timing
fall maternity leave for the baby she had in the spring.
Yeah, she was like a couple days either too late or too early apparently to having this lovely baby, and so they denied her maternity benefits, and that makes no sense at all. So we'll see what the Supreme Court does.
So this is going to the Supreme Court.
Oh yeah.
I guess the question, all right, so the baby arrived just before summer break.
Right.
District officials didn't allow her to use up her 30 days of paid leave when work resumed in August, according to the lawsuit, because she had 30 days to start to use it, right? And then it was at the end. And then in August, she wanted to use it when they returned.
Yes.
I'm not sure where I stand on this case.
You've got to give her the maternity benefit.
But that paid leave piece should be adjacent to the birth of the baby, shouldn't it?
That's normally true, yes.
You could do it later?
You could do it later. I mean, the child's going to need.
I mean, listen, you know when you really
care.
Need it? It's when the child turns 12.
That's right.
And it's
delay it for 12 years.
Right. It's such a pain to everything around it.
Exactly.
Because
or
it now,
15. 15's probably 15's better.
15's bad. This 15's, is a boy or a girl because it's 12 for one, 15 for the other.
Exactly.
Right.
So I will see what the Supreme Court does, but it's interesting that they took the case.
What happens when they start hanging out with the wrong people? Right? Is that you want? That's when you want paternity and maternity leave.
When the kid does that.
Yeah, right? when the kid. All
you're not
of a sudden,
you're not talking about the teacher.
Right. When the kid, when the girl comes home with a guy who's 10 years older than she is and has a Trans Am.
Yeah, that's right.
And tattoos.
Not to mention the tattoos.
On his neck.
Oh, those neck tattoos.
Right. If you don't get 30 days paternity leave or maternity leave at that moment, family leave, that's
you need some time. Right.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. How about this? Will there eventually be artificial intelligence judges?
Oh, I think they're already there. I think some are already there.
Look at Mike Monaco. Yeah, any judge you want to mention by name right now?
No, sir. I am not mentioning any judge by name. They are, but I think some of them are there.
They would use a predictive algorithm to determine cases.
Decisions.
Like child custody?
That's sure. That's not important. Right. No, it makes no sense at all. So I don't think that's going to happen. I know they have some traffic court in L.A. has something like this AI, some artificial intelligence, but...
Yeah, well,
really.
Let's be honest here. Yeah. Like, here... like traffic court here in Chicago. Yeah. I'm not talking about the suburbs because I'm sure it's totally fine in the suburbs.
Oh yes,
but in the city of Chicago, like the red light camera courts and stuff like that.
Yes,
there are actual kangaroos in the courtroom. It is such a rigged system. It's not like, oh, it's a kangaroo court. No.
They're real kangaroos.
There are real kangaroos officers.
I thought they cleaned all that up. I thought Graylord cleaned it.
Yeah, they got that all totally. Well these aren't even judges. They're administrative
they don't have ALJs.
Not in the traffic court, in the red light court.
Oh, in the red light court.
In the ticket court. You know, those
okay,
things.
Administrative law judges.
Yeah, administrative law judges. Okay. Now, those administrative law judges have to actually have gone to college.
You sound like someone who's been there, buddy.
I'm just saying.
You sound like someone who's had maybe one or two contacts with that courtroom.
I'm just saying to you that it does not appear that there's real justice going on there. Because you can show up, and I'm not complaining because this happened to me, but it did.
Oh, God.
You can, like with a parking ticket, you show up. First of all, you get a parking ticket, and you have like an hour to pay at minute doubles.
Or send it in.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, or if you contest it, you know, then there's a penalty for contesting if you lose.
Yeah. Welcome to the...
Right?
Welcome to...
City of Chicago.
Paying for your trial. That's right.
Who sent
you? A trial tax. That's what they call it.
It's basically what it is.
A trial
tax. So you can go in and you can show. You can show that you're
in California. You weren't even in Chicago.
Well, no, that we use that for a different defense, Michael.
Sorry.
I show them a picture of the times, you know, in which this is
that's impressive.
And this is a loading zone.
Oh.
And yet I got a ticket for being in a loading zone and an off time and the time on the ticket and then the time on the sign of the loading zone.
Oh, that's impressive, bro.
Guilty as charged.
Oh, that's not right.
Who
was that? Was that an artificial intelligence judge?
No, it was a human being. I thought it was a human being.
It's not. You can't be sure.
With hair on their forehead, it was still a human being. It was like,
all right.
No, that doesn't count.
Oh, okay. There you go.
The officer must have seen something that was different. That's why you got the ticket.
Oh, that's
yeah.
That's not right, bro. Right. I feel bad for you for that.
All right, so no artificial intelligence.
No.
So we're not going to get that.
Nope, no artificial intelligence.
All right, and there is also a school choice.
This is very controversial, and this could lead to a big change in the law. We'll see.
Supreme Court appears to be closely split during oral arguments. Right. And how do you know that for sure?
Because
the way they ask the questions.
They ask questions, and you can tell by the questions where they're leaning.
And this is Espinoza versus Montana.
Right.
Department of Revenue.
The state of Montana has a law.
Yeah. And basically what this is going to do centers around a tax credit scholarship program that the Montana state passed. It gives residents.
Religious schools are also going to get it. So that's the question, whether the state of Montana can give a tax money to a religious school. That's the whole question.
Right. So does this reverberate past just school choice?
Yeah,
this
is a big case.
Overturning the concept of separation of church and state?
This is a big case. They cannot overturn the difference between church and state, but they're coming close with this case. That's exactly right.
Is it? It's not. But if you pierce it on something like this, can't you pierce it on almost everything
else?
Yeah,
oh yeah.
Because this would be precedent, right?
Oh yeah.
I didn't even go to law school, but I did once try to go on my own to the ticket court on Superior Street here in Chicago.
You've got a lot of experience appears in court row. I'm not sure you want to be telling people about this, but
all right,
it's your show.
I got tickets right now. You want to go see? Would you like to go see Terry Fader, ventriloquist, impressionist, comedian, and singer at Aurora's Paramount Theater? Caller number 19 right now, 312-981-7200 rips us off to go see Terry Fader, Aurora Paramount, Saturday. If you want to go, you don't win, you want to go, though, you can buy your tickets right now at ParamountAurora.com. Thank you very much, Michael Monaco.
My pleasure, Ro. I'm glad you didn't bring anybody up to ask any wild questions of what they could do.
You should have seen the questions that we had. I could not have possibly done it.
Bob Surratt. In honor of the Grammys, I'll be playing something from my record collection at 7:40. You knew I'd eventually start playing the hits again, didn't you? Bob Surratt, mornings 5 to 9.
WGN. Richard Roper is here on the Rocon Show, brought to you by Architect. He's telling you what you can go see this weekend in the movie theater. And let's just say this, that we're going to end on a movie that you think everybody should go see, right? So I don't want to necessarily get ahead of myself there, but stay close with this, because there's especially if you are interested in more movies or justice. Right?
Absolutely.
I think those are the two things we should
It's
be.
The first great film of the decade, Ro. The film we're going to talk about.
Wow.
Up. Yeah.
So we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about it in a few.
All right. The Gentlemen. That is not the first great film of the decade, but it is. Is it good? Matthew McConaughey and Hugh Grant, Colin Farrell, Henry Golding. It's sort of like a crime thriller action deal.
Yeah, I mean, listen to those names right there, right? Quite a roster. This is a hard R, violent, darkly funny crime movie from Guy Ritchie. Now, people might remember that name. Guy Ritchie, 20 years ago, he was like on the forefront, a new wave of these action movies with really cool style and kind of dark humor. Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Snatch was another big movie.
Brad Pitt, great performance by Brad Pitt.
Exactly. And then he hit a little speed bump by the name of Madonna, because Guy Ritchie married Madonna, and they did a movie called Swept Away, which was one of the worst films ever made. Ever since then, he's had kind of an up-and-down career. He did the Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr.
Right.
And if you've seen those movies, you know what I'm talking about. There's sort of a modernist style, even when it's a period piece. Really cool, sweeping camera movements and kind of some Tarantino-esque. A lot of that kind of stuff with cool music and everything. So this, The Gentleman, is returned to form for Guy Ritchie. Since then, I mean, his last movie was Aladdin. He's done everything you could do in the business. But I think he wanted to go back one more time and do the kind of British crime film for which he first became famous. So here's the setup here. Matthew McConaughey plays a guy from Texas who is very smart, came from no money, grew up in poverty, but has built an empire as the leading marijuana manufacturer and distributor in Great Britain. Some would say Matthew McConaughey has been preparing for this role for 30 years. So the setup here is that he's got an empire, but he's getting to the point where he thinks, maybe I want to get out of this business. It's getting, you know, more dangerous and everything. And there's a clip here where he's talking to a guy, Jeremy Strong, who plays the son on Succession. If people have watched that on HBO, the second son who was going to be the, you know, succeeder to the empire, who's interested in buying the entire marijuana business from Matthew McConaughey, but doesn't quite trust him about why he wants to sell it.
Weed, bush, skunkamola, white widow super cheese. It's the new gold rush. This is the thin end of a very fat wedge, sir.
If it's such a fat wedge, why don't you keep it?
See, I've developed a reputation as a man who came up the hard way. You could say that there's blood on these pretty white hands. But in the new business, once legal and under the jurisdiction of the respectable umbrella of ministerial legitimacy, an enterprise like this will need a face with a clean past, which sadly, I do not possess. Retirement doesn't sound so bad.
So there's your setup. One of the things I love about this film, I'm going to say, first of all, 3.5 stars for The Gentleman. And, Ro, one of the things I love about this film is that there's all these leading men in this movie who are playing gritty character actors. So Charlie Hunnam, who was in Sons of Anarchy, has this big beard and thick glasses. Colin Farrell, same thing. Hugh Grant plays a guy with a Cockney accent. He's a low-level private eye. You could barely recognize him under his... In fact, he dresses exactly like Al Pacino and Donnie Brasco. Leather jacket, tinted glasses. So you can see all these guys who are normally leading men having a lot of fun playing gritty characters. And what happens in this movie, there's a kind of a movie within a movie... Different things start tumbling because of the fight for the giant marijuana empire. And one of the things Guy Ritchie does very well is creatively kill off people. You never know when that ledge might have a long, long, long drop to some train tracks or when someone will get actually shot in the middle of his head. You know, that kind of stuff. So you got to know going in, this is an R-rated movie that deserves its R-rated movie. Darkly humorous, great music, fantastic performances. Even Henry Golding, who was the gorgeous leading man in Crazy Rich Asians, and Michelle Dockery, who was Lady Mary in Downton Abbey, are playing against type in this.
Wow.
Michelle Dockery basically plays like a gangster model from a 30s movie, and she's great. And she, too, drops the normal accent, the highfalutin Downton accent, so for more of a Cockney.
Only took Guy Ritchie 15 years to get over Madonna, is what you're telling me.
Probably. I think so. I think he had to make some money. And a lot of his movies, his mainstream movies, has made money. I think he said, you know what? I'd like to go back one more time. And I will say one last thing about this movie. Some people are saying, well, I hear it's racist. It's like, no. There's a racist character in the movie who says racist things. He's also a low-life scum. And I think people need to be careful by prejudging, especially if you haven't seen a movie, by saying, oh, I heard it's racist because there's a racist character. There's a huge difference between the two.
All right. Thank you, Richard Roper. Film critic extraordinaire. On the other side of the break, we're going to tell you about what Richard says is the first great movie of the 2020s. But first, Lauren Lapka tells us about the traffic and the weather.
Vaping left a varsity athlete fighting to stay alive. See how vaping can destroy your lungs. A suburban teen's cautionary tale. Tonight's cover story on WGN TV News at 9.
Kevin, I thought that was an excellent read.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You're up for a promy.
That's very exciting.
Yes, best read of the afternoon.
And we can't get a host for that award show either.
it's way too controversial. Richard Roper is in the studio with us. Did you see, before we get back to the movies you should go see this weekend, or maybe you shouldn't, you said The Gentlemen. You should definitely go see that. 3.5 stars, right?
Yes.
That's the new Matthew McConaughey and Colin Farrell, Hugh Grant, Henry Golding movie.
Yes.
But did you see the story about the woman... She went on Good Morning America today, the woman who's the president of the NARIS, the National Recording Arts, the Grammy people.
Yes.
Saying the Grammys are rigged. That turns out Kanye was right, Richard Roper.
Oh, no.
Taylor Swift should not have won.
Oh, boy.
That Grammy.
So are we going to go back in time? There's a famous photo of Christopher Cross with his five Grammys that he won that one year. Maria, just that... Nothing against them. You know, I remember did the moon in New York City, the Arthur theme, and the Ride Like the Wind, and then sailing, you know. It keeps him away to where he wants to be.
Think of Laura.
Oh, my gosh.
All right.
Wow. Here's That's a deep dive.
Yeah. Man. All right. Let us now talk about the movie Color Out of Space.
Color Out of Space. Nicolas Cage has another movie out. It's been 7 minutes since Nicolas Cage last appeared in a film. This one actually is getting some theatrical release, but you'll find it as well. This is based on a century-old horror story. Here's the setup for this one. Nicolas Cage, the gentleman farmer, moves with his lovely wife, played by Jolie Richardson, wonderful actress, comes from royalty of acting, and their children. He moves from the city to this beautiful home in the country in Massachusetts, and a pink-purple meteorite lands in their front yard. Big pink-purple meteorite that seems to have some freaky qualities on them. Next thing you know, we've got a scene here. This is Nicolas Cage in the kitchen. Now, what's happening here, because some of this sounds is just physical, is things are getting out of control, and the formerly great dad is now complaining about not only problems he's having with the kids and the wife, but the fact that the tomatoes taste horrible. So that's what the setup for this.
I've got to do something about that dish. I am literally hemorrhaging clients.
Should be working, sweetie. I just checked it this morning.
No, I'm garbling the f*** out of everything I say. Nate, are you listening to me?
You know, I did everything I was supposed to do. I followed every f***ing rule in the book. In the end, they still f***ing taste like f***. You know what? Coming up!
Stop it! Just do something about that dish.
What is happening here?
He's slam dunking the tomatoes all over the kitchen because they're not tasting right. He keeps taking a big bite out of the tomatoes and throwing them. She's mad because she can't control things. Before the thing's over, all kinds of weird monster creatures, and there's blood and grotesquery and fantastic death scenes. And it's 3 stars if you're in the mood for a very grotesque, very scary Nicolas Cage film. As you could see right there, when he starts going, I've done everything I can do for this family. Oh, boy. There he goes. All while wearing a vest and a flannel shirt. You know, it's the only movie I've ever seen where there's a scene where Nicolas Cage explains to an outsider, he's milking the alpacas that they have on the farm.
Yeah, of course he is.
And he explains exactly how you have to manipulate the alpacas and then offers him the pan of the fresh alpaca milk with the hairs in it. Says, want to try some? The guy says no. Spoiler alert.
You know, you make an excellent point, Richard Roper, about Nicolas Cage. If you go through movies, free movies, you know, on demand, whether it's on any of the services, there are 60 Nicolas Cage movies, all from 2019.
It's amazing.
Now, this is because he's still paying off the IRS,
I think,
right?
There's some money issues there. And he loves to work. And the quality's up and down, but he never phones it in.
No, that's true.
Unless he likes to phone into us and talk about these movies. But even then, he's not phoning it in.
It's true. We do talk to him. He does like to promote through this show. I don't know what this is all, you know, for years now. I don't know what this has been about. But he always calls us from a cell phone that barely works. I'm going into a tunnel. I might lose you.
Yeah. Yeah, we lost him one time. And then he went nuts about that. Yeah, he'll say things like, I'm calling from the Hoover Dam, so you might miss me at some point. I'm like, you know what? You could go to an office, Nick.
I like him, though. I like him as an actor. I like him as a human. All right, Anne, now you're saying that The Last Full Measure is the first great movie of the 2020s.
I really hope people check out this film called The Last Full Measure, Ro. It is based on a true story about this heroic Air Force, what do they call them? Parachute rescue jumpers.
Pararescue,
thank you. And this is a real-life guy who, in one of the first and bloodiest battles of Vietnam, like 1966, we're talking. So his helicopter lands. He's there to provide support, and he was a medic as well, to Army soldiers, Army men who had been basically ambushed and were, you know, under fire. And he kept waving off the helicopter that was there to get him, picking up the guns of fallen soldiers and fighting off the enemy, doing everything that saved dozens of lives before he himself was killed in action. Now we cut forward in this movie to the year 1998, so it's 32 years after his heroics, and some of his former mates, including his partner in the helicopter and some of the Army soldiers who survived that day, are trying to get him the Medal of Honor. So here's a scene right now. William Hurt plays his former partner, and Sebastian Stan, who people might recognize from a lot of things, but he's the Winter Soldier in the Avengers movies. Okay. He's the young Pentagon staffer who's assigned to review this case.
Pitt saved lives.
And he was awarded an Air Force Cross. What's wrong with that?
It was downgraded to the cross. We put him up for the Medal of Honor. That's different.
Sergeant, I'm going to tell you something you probably already know. Decoration upgrades are rare. The criteria for review is new information.
I figured the new information part was your job.
This was 30 years ago. I mean, is there an agenda you have I should know about?
Justice delayed is justice denied. That's my damn agenda.
Great, great acting by William Hurt there. Also in this movie, Ed Harris, Samuel L. Jackson, and the late Peter Fonda, all playing veterans whose lives were touched by this real-life guy that they called Pitts. And I got to tell you, Ro, even for Samuel L. Jackson, who usually dials it all the way up to 10, he's playing a veteran with PTSD here, and you think, oh, gosh, there's going to be a scene where he breaks everything and goes, it's not that at all. It's this quietly powerful performance. Same thing, and there's a certain irony, of course. Peter Fonda's last live-action movie, he's voiceover for an animated character coming up in a few months, but his last live-action role in his last scene, he's wearing his uniform from Vietnam, which there's a certain irony, of course, because Peter Fonda was at the forefront of protesting the war, but always respected veterans and the soldiers. He was never about that. And this is a very honorable portrayal by Peter Fonda and all of these great actors.
John Savage is in this movie.
John Savage, who people might remember, of course, from The Deer Hunter.
Right.
And in some ways, this movie reminded me of that, role because, yes, there are war scenes, but it's more about the aftermath of war. It's more in the vein of coming home.
Right.
And The Deer Hunter. John Savage's character is a fascinating guy. He never left Southeast Asia. He's still there. And he actually kind of is conducting tours for veterans who want to go back to Vietnam.
Which is a real thing.
A real thing. And he offers them, not forgiveness, but for a chance for them to feel like maybe they didn't do the wrong thing that they feel bad about because they were following orders and they were in a war that was unjust, but it wasn't their call. And it's almost like a healing role. And he's great. And to imagine seeing this John Savage 40 years after The Deer Hunter in a film about the Vietnam War.
Wow. That's pretty powerful. Michael Imperioli is also in it from The Sopranos.
Yes, and Amy Madigan, Christopher Plummer plays the father of Pitts, the soldier who was killed. And the guy was 19 years old when he joined the Air Force. So his room from when he was a teenager is still in the home. And there's a powerful scene there.
So this movie did actually hit theaters in 2019. Why do you think?
It played for a week to get Oscar eligibility, but it's brand new to audiences everywhere else, including Chicago. You know, it's hard to say why a movie, even this one, the truth is it's probably not going to do huge box office. I think it's better than 90% of the movies that came out last year, and it's as good as most of the Oscar nominees. You know, and you could make a case, if the right people had seen this film, there's 7 performances in this movie that could be up for Best Supporting Actor. William Hurt, Ed Harris, Samuel L. Jackson, down the line, every one of them gives an award worthy performance. The great thing is you got a chance to see it now. It is in theaters now.
And it's called The Last Full Measure.
Yes.
And how many stars?
4 stars. 4 stars for The Last Full Measure. People, please don't feel like this is a history lesson or always just somber. Like a lot of great war films, it's about the individuals, not the bureaucracy. And there's always a lot of moments where you're like, you feel damn lucky that men and women fought for us through the wars and through the years, and fight for the memories of fallen heroes who might otherwise have been forgotten.
We're in that remembrance moment. You know, we're basically losing the greatest generation daily, and it won't be too long before they're all gone,
essentially, absolutely.
Or most. And it now, those where we were 20 years ago, that's the Vietnam generation.
Yeah.
That is entering in here, that are people, because the Vietnam War essentially started 60 years ago.
Yeah, you're right, and ended in 74. So the youngest Vietnam veterans are now 70-ish.
Right.
And, you know, as you mentioned, because for as long when we were growing up, it was World War II veterans. I mean, there's still quite a few, but now the Vietnam veterans are more men in their 70s and 80s.
Exactly. And so all of the issues, and they've been in letters, a lot of films that have essayed all of the different iterations of their experience, from the war movies from the 1960s to all the way through, and then coming home, the movies about having to deal with what it was like to be a Vietnam veteran in the 1970s, and then how it changed by the time we get to the 1990s. So this film sort of tells that entire arc, right?
There's a great line from one of the characters where he says, for 35 years, something you did over the course of 20 seconds defines who you are.
The Last Full Measure, 4 stars. Best... So far, this is the best movie of the decade.
Absolutely.
So far. All right. Go see it. Right now, Kim Gordon's got the WGN News. Yes, it's the Rokan Show. Richard Roper is here. We were just reviewing some movies, or he was just reviewing some movies, because that's what he does. He's a movie reviewer of great renown. You can read him in the Chicago Sun-Times. There's a gigantic size of a building billboard on Hollywood Boulevard right now that is quoting him about The Irishman, as a matter of fact. Although, I'm taking credit right now because you and I have launched a podcast on... The Sun-Times has launched a podcast featuring you and me.
Correct.
That talking about the best movies of the decade. That one is already up and going concern and wildly successful, and we were very happy about that. The next season of this just launched today, and we are doing the Oscar movies. The whole podcast series is called The Best Movies.
Countdown to Gold. I will say one thing quickly about that 7-story billboard where I've contacted them. I think they should have quotes from me all year round. And not only just about movies, but like today I was thinking, like, why does the Scotch tape dispenser, it's always hard to get that thing separate, and then if the tape gets back on it, you can't get the tape up. You know, why hasn't it gotten any better?
Yeah. I would rather that they just quote the podcast, quite honestly. The Best Movies.
I've got other comments, though.
All right. Hey, a couple of things are happening here. If you want, if people want to download that podcast, go to the Chicago Sun-Times or Spotify or anything. Just look up Richard Roper and Rokon, and you will find that podcast. And we have just launched the our diagnosis of Best Supporting Actress, Best Supporting Actor.
Yes.
Right? And then there will be Best Actor, Best Actress.
Yes.
Best Picture, and your cheat sheet. This is the most important thing you can do, because right now, gambling on the Oscars is legal in Indiana.
Isn't this crazy? You know, for years when we would talk about the Oscar ballot and filling out your picks for the 24 categories that are televised, it was to win the, you know, the company pool or the thing you would do with your friends. Now you can actually bet on the Academy Awards in certain states, including Indiana just approved it, where you can either go to a casino or if, because they have mobile apps now.
Right.
These mobile apps, people know if you live in Northwest Indiana, when you cross the state line and you hit Illinois, they no longer work. They know that you're not in Indiana anymore. It's like, I can bet. I can't bet. I can bet. You could jump over the state line. It's sort of like, I could smoke pot. I'd get arrested depending on what state you're in. So last year, the state of New Jersey was had passed legislation saying we're going to have Oscar odds. They posted them, and within 24 hours, they took them down because there was some concern, oh, people know in advance because the voting will close at a certain time. Really don't, but there was a little bit of concern about that. Now they're like, no, we feel secure about this. So you can bet on the main categories. I will say this, Rogue, I would caution people. First of all, the maximum you can bet on any category is $1,000. They don't, because they don't want someone going in there.
Thank you for warning me.
Yes, yeah. So I'm letting you know. Now, if you want to have friends go in there, you know, and of course, even in the big casinos and the big sports books in Vegas, they can limit your action if they want, although they're usually happy to take someone. Wants to put $200,000 on the 49ers against the Chiefs, they'll take that bet. In this case, you know, Joaquin Phoenix, for example, is a prohibitive favorite, right?
I think to win for best actor.
1 to 20, I believe, are the odds right now. In other words, you for every you have to put down $20 to win a dollar, right? So
that doesn't seem right.
No, and he's going to win. Now, with, you know, Dave Feldman, the late great sports handicapper, horse racing handicapper, used to say when a horse was like 1 to 10, he would bet on it if it was that big a favorite. He goes, because if someone said, hey, you want 10% interest on your money in 3 minutes or 2 minutes, wouldn't you take it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Joaquin Phoenix, you could walk in and put $1 million on him to win 50 grand. They're not going to let you do that. And be warned, these aren't, I'm calling them locks, but you never know.
That's true.
Upsets have happened.
That's true. We'll do them all coming up here in just a second. The interesting twist in all of this is that this year we have a really good indication, because in the acting category specifically, because of the Screen Actors Guild Awards, it's become a really solid predictor of what's going to happen, because it's actors who are voting for actors, and that's what happens in the Academy as well. In the Academy, the specialties vote for the specialties, except for Best Picture, everybody votes.
Well, for when you get to Best Actor in the Academy Awards, everybody in the Academy is voting at that point. The nominations are done actor for actor. So the 7,000 members of the Academy all do get to vote for like best actor and best actress as well.
And best supporting too.
And best supporting. But the acting branch is about 20% of the Academy. So it's sort of like the Iowa primary or the caucuses. If you got a certain base there, you're going to be favored. So right now it seems like a lock that Renee Zellweger and Joaquin Phoenix and Brad Pitt and Laura Dern are going to win. That's why they're all heavy favorites. In these real-life betting scenarios, you're going to have to put up anywhere from $10 to $20 to win a buck.
You know, I'm a very famed gambler myself.
Yes, that's
and
what I say.
Especially
very famed.
Especially in the horse racing world. Mm-hmm. I have actually bet on every horse in a race. I have a ticket that has every horse number in a race, and I have still lost.
Wow! So how do you do that?
I there's a way to do it. Yes, there is. I didn't do a win on every horse.
Oh, because I was going to say, unless there was some sort of horrible tsunami or something.
I was tricking the bet up, and I had every number in the race in like seven horse race, and I somehow still lost. So
congratulations.
I will go through the odds with you coming up here in just a moment. And as you pointed out, they're probably the best actor and actress is not going to pan out. But if people want to vote for best director, that's an interesting race. Best film, best picture is an interesting race. We'll do all of that coming up at first. Lauren Lapka tells us for the last time this afternoon what's happening on the roads and the skies. Richard Roper is here. We're talking about gambling. Thank God. No one talks about gambling anymore now that it's totally legal. But we're talking about gambling on the Oscars, actually, because the Oscars in Indiana, they just announced that there will be legal gambling with a $1,000 limit per bet on the Oscars, which are going to be on TV in a couple of weeks.
Exactly right. And, Ro, we've talked about on the acting categories. I mean, listen, if you want to drop 10 or 20 bucks on one of the long shots, it could make it fun. I think all the favorites are pretty much locks. But if you were looking for an upset, maybe in Best Actress, as much as Renee Zellweger's been sweeping everything for Judy, but Scarlett Johansson, maybe, for Marriage Story there. She's nominated for Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress. I could see a thing happening, a quirk of the Academy, where for some reason they're like, you know what? They all vote for her in one category or the other, and I think you can get a pretty good number on that. So if you bet on Scarlett Johansson, if you put $100 on Scarlett Johansson to win Best Actress, you'd win $1,200. That's a pretty good deal.
Oh.
Or even, you know, $10, you win 120 smackers, so... just kind of makes it fun. The other thing that's really up for grabs, Ro, is Best Picture, where 1917, Parasite, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood all have a shot right now.
Okay, let's talk about this for people who may not have seen the movies, but sure, they will like to gamble. Okay, that's who we're talking to right
Don't
now.
Don't let it stop you.
Yeah. So 1917, World War I epic. Beautifully shot. A use of technique that is really hard to pull off because it's single shot. It appears as though it's a single camera following right, these two guys through, literally running across the fields of yeah, France to try to go warn a unit that is about to get caught in an ambush. And because it's 1917, they don't have telephones. They can't call them. Right?
Yeah.
So they're out there trying to actually get this message to them. It's very harrowing. It's an amazing film. It actually harkens back to a number of other war films throughout the years that will remind you of, including Full Metal Jacket. There's some scenes that are amazingly similar. You could tell that the director here was the Siege at Wei is basically reenacted in this film.
Sam Mendes, the director, of course, and Stanley Kubrick, who directed Full Metal Jacket. And it's also similar, Ro, in that, you know, Stanley Kubrick famously would build these entire giant sound stages. He'd do a movie set in New York and film it all in London or in Italy. And same thing here. There's a making of feature about 1917 that's on HBO right now, about 20 minutes. It's incredible how much of it's not special effects. They show them building out these incredible giant sets with hundreds of actors playing the soldiers, and even the use of lighting where you're thinking, oh, that just must have been some sort of special effect they did to illustrate, you know, bombs dropping at night and stuff. And it's all this really incredible filmmaking. It's also a prestige project. So right now it's become the favorite. Parasite is the moral lock to win Best International Film. They used to call it Best Foreign Language. But it's also a film that when people see it, if enough voters see it, that in that case it means some of those in their 90s have to get someone to bring it to them. That's I'm not kidding about that. That, you know, that's another one. And then Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which right now was the favorite for Best Picture, and now seems to be, it's like, as we always talk about, like a political race. All of a sudden it feels like he's losing a little momentum.
It's 5-1 right
now. 5-1. Yeah. I would take a shot on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood at 5-1.
Put $100 on it.
People love, as we always talk about, the Academy loves Hollywood. Hollywood loves Hollywood. It is a movie about movie and television production. Brad Pitt's going to win. Tarantino's going to win for Best Screenplay, so maybe it wins Best Picture as well.
I think that Parasite, it at 2-1, is way too... That's. I think you're just throwing your money away on that. Because even if you did win at 2-1, I just don't think it's a lock. It is a foreign language film. It is all in subtitles. It is great. There is no question about it. But I just don't think enough of the Academy voters will end up seeing
it.
And that's why. Joker, interestingly enough, is 25-1. That would be, if I were to go away from the favorite 1917, I probably would go with Joker.
It's a good bet, right? 25-1. And Joker, it's sort of the politically correct elite. Certain elements of the press have really kind of taken off after this film. Hollywood doesn't care about that. Last year, Green Book, all the people on Twitter were saying, oh, Green Book, it's racist. Oh, it's not real. It didn't really happen that way. And it won Best Picture. You know, so if Hollywood, if they dig it, and they do dig, you know, the look of this film, and Joaquin Phoenix is going to win, I think you're right, 25-1. That's the same reason I think with Best Actress, there's at least a sliver of a chance that Renee Zellweger doesn't win. There's got to be at least 20 members of the Academy who could say, you know, I dated Judy Garland right after the Dick Cavett show in 61, and this is an outrage. That girl doesn't sound anything like her. That's a possibility.
Right, those guys. Those guys will be the ones voting, though.
I was the key grip on Meet Me in St. Louis. And let me tell you something. There was only one Judy Garland.
In the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, there are as many people who were contemporaries of Judy Garland as there are contemporaries of some kid actor. I think the Stranger Things cast. Okay, Best Director... You think is going to go to Sam Mendes for this because it's
hand in hand.
For 1917 because he is the odds-on favorite here.
Yes, yeah, and a lot of times, although it's changed in recent years, director and best picture used to go hand in hand. But I think it goes back. And Sam Mendes is a very well-respected British director. He did American Beauty 20 years ago. That's probably his most famous film. And as we've talked about, this film's going to win for all the sound mixing, sound editing. Editing itself, it's going to win probably 6 Academy Awards.
Martin Scorsese is 20-1 for The Irishman.
Isn't that crazy?
I think that I would steer away from that. There's a reason that The Irishman has been basically skunked this entire award season. It's great, but these other movies are better, and The Irishman takes about a day and a half to get through.
Well, I think more than anything, it's a Netflix film. That's what works against it. If Universal Pictures or somebody like that, if it had been a theatrical release. A big studio production, The Irishman, and De Niro, who wasn't even nominated, and Pesci would probably be favorites.
Todd Phillips, that is my odds. He's 50-1 right now. He's the director of Joker. I'm going to take that bet. I'm going to take Joker to be the surprise of this Oscar season because you've got Joaquin Phoenix already is going to win, right? But Joker as a movie, it is astounding as a film. When you watch it, you look at these performances and the way it washes across you, it is not as dark as one anticipated to be because what they do is they use a bunch of tricks of light and of costume and all the rest of that stuff to elevate you out of the incredible descent of madness that this character is going through. And Todd Phillips is so masterful in his direction of this film.
That's a great point. It goes back to something like Taxi Driver where people go, oh my God, it was the most violent movie ever. And there are maybe 5 murders, you know, killings in the entire movie, something like that in Taxi Driver. Same thing with Joker. You know, these movies are about so much more than the sporadic bursts of violence that when they happen, when the violence does occur, it's that much more shocking and gripping and real.
And there's also a prop bet. Will Brad Pitt bring a date to the Oscars? Yes or no?
Answer is no. Now, I don't know if you're going to be able to bet that at the sports books, if they have that. I know that's on some of the online things. I can tell you, trust me on this, Brad is not bringing a date to the Oscars. He's bringing his mother.
Okay.
Now, the books could say, aha,
but is he going on Tinder right after that?
Yeah. Well, because he's you know, Brad Pitt knows better. He's too smart, and he's not involved in a serious relationship, and he's well past that point. Look, there's a point where young actors are like, I got invited to the Oscars. I'm taking that hot chick I met on the set. He's not going to do that because that's going to become the story. He doesn't want that to be the story.
All right. Okay. If you say so, Richard Rowe.
I'm telling you guys right now.
All right.
Thank you. No date for Brad. My new song.
Excellent. Okay. All right.
All right.
Justin Kaufman is coming your way next on the extension in the 7 and the 20. That's all happening right here on 720 WGN right after this. And news with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom at the top of the hour.
Fresh from rolling over the 1,000-point mark.
Hockey, baby!
Patrick Kane joins the best of the best for the NHL All-Star Game. Hear every shift, every call on WGN Radio. Saturday night at 7. WGN!